entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
You better believe it, just like the man said. Well, and the girls sing about. I'm Lair Adams. I'm one of your... Actually, I'm one of your radio operators on tonight's cruise of news. Hope you enjoy your stay on board the luxury liner, the American Adversaries on AM 660, The Answer. I hate to bring about bad news, but this week, we learned some unsavory economic news. The gross domestic output was down, lower than expected. Now, if that weren't gross enough, one of America's largest steel manufacturing plants is shutting down for lack of demand. Finally, for the first time since the Depression, more businesses are closing their doors. A new one starting up. We need to send an SOS to our captain for help. He's our host, Christopher Hart.
Oh, thanks so very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on this beautiful, actually spring-like day here in Altamont Springs in all of Central Florida. And welcome to the show. That's right. We're departing right now on our three-hour Sunday evening classic tour. And we got a boatload, so to speak, tonight. We got a boatload of good stuff for you. And I think you're going to enjoy the show. And you can, of course, be a part of the show. You know the phone number. In case you don't, it's 407-774-8255. And we'll be live until 8 o'clock tonight with the American Adversaries coming
to you. Hours away.
That's right. From AM 660, The Answer. Don't forget, you can always catch our show streaming at am660theanswer.com. As we come to you from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios for the very best in Mercury Free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. Yeah, as I said, we got a boatload for you tonight. That was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. We have our executive producer, Nostradamus, in studio.
Hi there.
Our WTF news hound, Johnny Guns.
Right here.
Right there. Carl Jackson won't be here tonight. He's spending one last night with his family, but we got an adequate sit-in, I think, because it's another African-American, our very own Aubrey Kahn.
Good evening.
Taylor skin, I would have to say.
Carl Jackson is a frickin' American. By the way, what up, Carl?
He's enjoying one last night in town with his family in town. And
Was that a word you used?
African American.
He's a frickin' American. That's what he tells people.
Frickin'. All right, and Johnny, let's see.
I'm turning red.
Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight.
How you doing?
So we're in good hands, and I think you're going to get a kick out of tonight's show. Real quick, happy Palm Sunday to everyone out there in the listening audience, and anybody else out there who's not listening, because these waves are going through your brain, whether you like it or not. That's a cool thing about radio, you know. The waves that we put out there
when
penetrate
sleep,
things.
They do. And if you have a certain type of filling, the certain size, you can actually hear us in your brain without a radio.
That's right.
We're in your head, so to speak. And but it is actually Palm Sunday, so we do want to wish everyone a happy Palm Sunday. And later on in the show, we're not going to be here next week. We're going to take Easter night off, but we will be back, of course, the following Sunday. So we're going to kind of do a bit of an...
Well, we'll be back the Monday after.
Well, we will. Yeah, but I mean in terms of Sunday shows. We will be doing an Easter tribute tonight.
I just realized, too, I was looking ahead at our schedule. We are celebrating Easter week coming up. We've got three Jewish guests in a row. Did you realize that?
No, I did not.
We got Abe Katzman on Monday, okay. Our man from Jerusalem.
Yeah.
We got Nancy Luden from the Jewish Pavilion in on Tuesday. And we're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Aviv Regev, former Israeli Air Force pilot, with us on Wednesday to talk
awesome.
About a movie he's in called Beneath the Helmet.
Great lineup, Dennis.
Hey,
Jew after Jew after Jew. Happy Easter, everybody.
How about that? That's going to be a lot of fun to talk to those folks. And tonight we got a special guest. We're going to talk a little transgender politics with someone who's going through the transgender transformation, I guess.
Is that
say.
Aubrey Kahn?
Well,
I should have not.
Aubrey, dude. You have to shave the mustache.
Listen,
do something with your hair.
I am twice the man my mother was, okay?
We'll also take up the conversation with Sunny, our glow girl. You know, a very interesting editorial came out this past week by none other than our good buddy Timmy Robbins. You know, the Wall Street, what do they call those people who were on Wall Street protesting?
Occupy.
Yeah, Wall Street yeah. Occupiers.
You mean Mr. Susan Sarandon? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah. The actors union came out with a new policy that there is to be a minimum wage for actors. And because it's the minimum wage craze, right?
It's zero if you don't get any gigs.
Well, wait a minute. It is if you're in the union. There's
real good union pay. Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, up until now, evidently, there was an exception for actors like himself or anybody who would want to act at a small theater, like a downtown theater type thing. They called them 99-seaters. Mm-hmm. With 99 seats or less, any actor could act there for free.
Could.
Right. And the union wants to change that to, oh, no, they're going to have to start getting paid and at this certain rate, which will be a diminished rate. But nonetheless, these theaters can't afford to pay anybody anything. A lot of times, even the production staff is voluntary.
Sure.
So
these guys can't do summer stock. They can't do these other things to kind of keep their careers
exactly,
up.
Exactly. Or just take a part that they want to play that they couldn't play, you know, on the screen. And of course, young actors coming up who want to volunteer their services just hoping that somebody will see them.
So there goes the arts right there.
So, but the interesting thing, of course, about this is all this we understand quite clearly.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we argue against a minimum wage,
yep.
Especially a minimum wage hike. But, of course, he's from the other side. And so now
he's as far to the other side as you can go, Chris.
Now the shoe is on the other foot, right, Aubrey? See what happens?
Well, don't worry. Barack Obama will step in and put them all on.
Sure.
Disability.
Sure. Just like all the people who used to work in that bookstore in San Francisco or all the fast food places in Seattle that now are either moving or closing down because they can't afford to pay minimum wage workers a higher minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, $15 an hour in Seattle.
Yeah.
And
so
the people that can't expand their businesses because of the health care law mm-hmm. that makes them pay if they go beyond a certain number of employees.
We're going to sort of deal with all of that stuff in the second hour of the show when we talk a little bit about taxes. You know, it's tax season, right? And presidential politics. But first, I want to say, Dr. Dennis, you got a kick out of this. Yesterday, I drove downtown. I was out running some errands. Saturday's my errand day. That's the one day I can do stuff that I got to do.
It's one day
grass.
We're not on the air.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they're going to get ready to raise Tinker Field.
I heard that. That's a shame, but, you know, it's kind of overdue.
Well, they should never let the stadium get in the shape that it's in now. When I walked around it yesterday, I was just, you know.
It looks like it's 90 years old. It really does.
Heartbroken, yeah. Absolutely. And it looks like it was neglected for the past 10 or 15, which it has been.
Is this the one in Sanford?
It's right next to the Citrus Bowl. It's where.
Oh, okay. That
named
right.
after
yeah.
Joe
oh.
Tinker,
yeah.
the shortstop for the Chicago Cubs back in the 1920s.
Tinkered Evers to Chance. Yeah. They were famous for the double play combination.
Yep.
And, Joe Tinker. And they used to have a little plaque. They still have the monument there, but the plaque is gone. But you get a kick out of this. You know, I grew up down there. Mm-hmm. And couldn't wait for spring training baseball because that's when we got to see the big leaguers out there.
And the Twins were there when you were youth, right?
You better believe it. And I got to meet Cal Griffith later on when I was 19-year-old, his 19-year-old bartender downtown. And because it's still at that time, you know, he owned the Twins. And Rod Carew came through there. Harmon Killebrew came through there. And all the big stars came through there. And it was the place would be, of course, jam-packed. And I reminisced about how we would play along underneath the grandstand or underneath the bleachers waiting for the foul balls, you know, and stuff. Yeah. And I've walked around, but this is the part you'd like. They had the grandstand and everything, the building basically all fenced off, no trespassing. So I didn't mess with that, but you could walk out on the field. So
really?
I walked out on the field. I took a few pictures, and then I stepped up to home plate, and I hit a home run, and I did the home run trot.
You know, you might not know this. I've been in Tinker Field a few times. Johnny Gunn's actually pitched from the pitcher's mound of Tinker Field.
Well, Johnny Gunn's, I got something for you then.
Okay.
Because after I did the home run trot and stamped down on home plate, I walked out to the pitcher's mound and wound up and took a pitch. And then I kicked my heel into the mound and loosened up some of the clay. And it was still a little damp from the rain the night before. So it packed kind of nicely into a ball. So I packed up a ball of the clay, and I took it with me.
Tinker clay.
So I'll bring you some of it.
If you plant it in your backyard, can you grow your own stadium?
We shall see, you know. What they say, build, whatever.
Yeah.
But I really hated to see the stadium that it's in the shape. But nonetheless, walking around really brought back some great memories. And I got a baseball that I signed there. I can't remember the year, but Lair and I met a guy recently at a golf tournament we did because of the show here. Felix Mian, who played for the Atlanta Braves.
And the Mets.
You better believe it.
Oh, yeah.
And I told him about that baseball. I still have it at home. And Eddie Matthews signed that sucker, too. Eddie Matthews, 512 home runs. And Dusty Baker signed it. It was his rookie year. So whatever year it was Dusty Baker's rookie year, that's the year that baseball was signed, as well as the rest of the Atlanta Braves. Of course, Hank Aaron wasn't there. At that time, he was such a big player that he didn't go on the road to Orlando to play the Twins.
A quick Felix Mian Mets story. Joe Torre played for the Mets for a short time.
And the Braves.
Right. But before he retired, he played for the Mets for a year or two. And in one game, he grounded into four double plays. And he didn't blame anyone but Felix Mian. He said, Felix got hits in front of me four times. What else could I do? It's his fault I did that.
And, of course, Joe Torre went on to become the famous manager for the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the Dodgers, too, didn't he manage?
Yeah, mostly the Yankees, a couple of years for the Dodgers. Yep.
Yeah, and very, very successful. He's also managed the Braves for a while very successfully. It broke my heart when they fired him. Broke my heart yesterday, too, folks. But Tinker to Evers to Chance. We'll just have to remember it now. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm going to talk about the showdown brewing in Indiana. And no, I'm not talking about the Final Four. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got the American Adversaries warming things up for John Butler. Buck, who's going to be joining you folks at 8 o'clock up the dial at 950 WTLN.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Getting so many stations around here, I can't juggle them all at one time. WTLN, 950, 8 o'clock.
Wait till
live.
Our new stations come in.
That's right. 8 to 9 live with John Butler, Buck. And don't forget, 8 to 11 live on AM 660. The Answer, of course, Armed American Radio with Mark Walters. And don't forget, before we get out of here tonight, we're going to do a special Easter, if you will, the trial and execution of God's plan. That's going to be sort of the theme to tonight's show. Okay, before we get to this showdown brewing in Indiana, I want to just talk about a little hootenanny we're going to have. And it's going to be April the 20th. And it's going to be a Cafe Positano, and Aubrey Kahn's going to be there, right?
I am.
Yeah, you better be.
Is it really a hoot nanny? Do we have to bring our boots and our cowboy hats?
Yeehaw, yeah.
Can I bring my nanny?
Yeah. we're going to have us a car show.
You're sick.
Yeah. Car show sponsored by Just Toys Classic Cars and Ken V. Heck and the Shriners. And it's to celebrate the fact that we've already in the books now about 1,015 shows. I mean, we're racking them up. But 1,000, our 1,000th 1,000th show was on March the 11th, and that's what we're going to be officially celebrating on April the 20th. And who knows what else we might be celebrating, too. We'll be celebrating Aubrey Kahn's been with us a year now as a sponsor. We'll be celebrating the fact that Cafe Positano has been with us 4 years now as a sponsor. And, of course, we'll be celebrating if some of you folks out there sign up as new sponsors. We'll be celebrating a lot of things. But most importantly, we want you to come out and celebrate with us.
Do you realize this? We have done more American Adversary shows than there have been original Saturday Night Live shows.
How do you like that?
And they've been around for 40 years.
Well, I guess we've blown away the Simpsons, too, then, haven't we?
Yeah, because they hit 500.
Oh, really?
500, 25, 50. Yeah, we're ahead of them, too. Oh. When you do it 6 days a week, it's easy to catch up.
That's right. That's right. We still need more time, though. I get so frustrated during the week, like Friday's show. We needed another hour. After Friday's show. All right, that'll be our prayer for tonight. More time. More time we can spend with Aubrey Kahn and you folks out there. 407-774-8255 is the number. But once again, come out and join us on April the 20th. And the live remote, of course, will be starting. That's a Monday. So the live remote will be, well, we always start at 5 o'clock. So that's when the live remote will be starting. And you're welcome to come on out. Pasquale's going to do some special things. Of course, all of our Army will get coupons for at least 20% off. And it's going to be a lot of fun. They even said, Ken said they may even bring Gus out there.
Who?
Gus.
The camel.
That's, yeah, there you go.
Oh, the camel with the fez.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, so I can't promise the camel, but there will
Smoking.
Be.
Smoking.
Wait, what day is it?
April the 20th.
What day is it? What day is it? No, Monday's not hump day.
Well, in this case, it would be. Your pod show because camels spit.
This one, I think, swills beer, too. So it'd be an interesting day.
Who doesn't?
So come on out and swill some beer with us or at least eat some pizza with us and celebrate. Help us celebrate 1,000 shows because couldn't do it without you folks either. Without the listeners, we got nothing. All right. There's a showdown in Indiana. Now, Indiana's hosting the Final Four, aren't they,
yes.
later this week?
Yes.
And who are the teams that finally made it in? Do you know?
Right now, I believe it's just Wisconsin and Kentucky that are confirmed.
And then the other two are playing
Gonzaga's
out.
Gonzaga's one of them. And Duke. Michigan State's still in it.
The other two of the Final Eight are playing out right
today,
now, I believe,
right.
Yeah. And But that's not the showdown we're talking about. Nostradamus, give us the layout of the controversy, if you will.
Well, there's a law that Indiana Governor Mike Pence signed into law on Thursday in Indiana. What it does is it says that businesses do not have to conform to serve gay individuals or groups if they have a religious objection to serving them as such. And there's been a whole bunch of different legislature thrown around. Pence actually signed this one, and it's caused a firestorm. A lot of people, a lot of groups have come out and said, well, that's it. We're boycotting Indiana.
And there were protests yesterday and people calling for boycotting the Final Four. And Pence was on a couple of the shows this morning. He was grilled by little Georgie Porgy Stephanopoulos. I never saw Georgie. It's been a long time since I saw little Georgie go after somebody with the fervor that he took out on Mike Pence this morning. And Pence just kept repeating over and over again, this is something that's been affirmed by the courts in all 50 states of the nation, and is practiced in some 34 states, either because of the affirmation by the courts or because of specific laws like this that have been passed. And basically what this does is it prevents the baker from getting sued, say, if they don't want to bake a cake for someone who's having a gay wedding. Is that too simplified, Dennis?
No, that's an example of
It covers everyone. So you can't sue a Muslim butchery for not selling pork.
Right.
Exactly. It is a religious freedom law.
Right.
And Pence pointed out this morning, and of course he was criticized for this, but he pointed out that Bill Clinton signed just such a law when he was president of the United States for the nation.
Okay, now really quickly, Dennis, how far does this go? I mean, if a business wants to say they don't believe in interracial marriage, That could they say, no, I don't, because
we won't bake your cake. We we won't adopt children out to you.
Those
are all things that need to be brought up.
Is that in it?
The Washington-based Human Rights Campaign came out with a statement saying, this basically says, as long as your religion tells you to, it's okay to discriminate against people despite what the law says, according to the group's legal director.
And, of course, that's the way they look at it. And
you have to look at it.
The proponents of this bill would say, look, we have religious freedoms. I shouldn't be forced to protect to, for instance, I shouldn't be forced to practice someone else's religion, right?
Right.
In other words, if I'm a Christian, I should not be forced to practice the Islam faith, should I?
Right. In New York City,
should I be forced?
What does that have to do with the interracial marriage thing?
Everything.
Everything?
Yes, if you will let me finish.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It has nothing to do with the Muslim side of the equation. It has everything to do with the Christian side of the equation. In other words, you are forcing me, forget about that it's Muslim, or I think that it is, because what you're forcing me to do is something against my religion. And therefore, it really doesn't matter what group it is on the other side of the equation. I used Islam to get that reaction out of you. You're upset the other way because of someone secular forcing their secular beliefs, religion, if you will, on me. So it is the same thing. In other words, if gay people want to force their belief system on Christians, it is no different than Muslims wanting to force their belief system on Christians.
No, I'll go back here to an interracial situation.
Okay, I want to address that. If the language is vague enough, then what you will still get is lawsuits. This is meant to prevent lawsuits, but we all know there's a perverse rule in politics that says that most laws that are passed cause the opposite effect. So even though it is meant to prevent lawsuits, it will probably spur more lawsuits and force the courts to define those limitations that you just brought up.
But I think one of the things within the article was it's not necessarily religious, but religion-based, because it says that you cannot force the KKK cannot go into a bakery and force the baker to make cakes in the shape of swastikas. All right, so it's not just a religious thing.
Right.
But it is based on religious freedom.
Yes. It's based on the First Amendment.
Right. There was an issue in New York City about 15 years ago in which an independent cab driver would not let a blind passenger with a seeing eye dog in the back of his taxi. Because he was a Muslim and dogs are dirty. And he didn't want that dirty dog in the back of his cab. It turns out he was upheld because he was an independent taxi driver. If he drove for a fleet that got any kind of subsidies from anyone, state, federal, or local, he would not be permitted to exercise his religious beliefs.
So how does this new law not muddy the waters even more?
It might.
Well, that's what we're saying. It just very well might. But what Pence was arguing, and to be honest with you, I was not impressed with Mike Pence. He was on the defensive the whole time, and his defense was basically, well, Bill Clinton did it. If that's the best we can come up with.
Yeah. He said, if I thought it legalized discrimination in any way, I would have vetoed it. But it's not about discrimination, so I passed it.
Yeah. And, of course, this was a guy whose name has also been kicked around as a presidential hopeful. And maybe he was trying to earn his street cred, so to speak. But he's going to have to perform, I think, a little bit better. When you can let Georgie Porgy Stephanopoulos kind of back you against the wall, you're not fighting a very smart fight.
And Chris, let's call a spade here. Discriminate is discriminate. If it says you can say, no, I won't because of this, that's a form of discrimination, whether you agree with it or not.
Well,
and I can see certain people having the right to discriminate.
And
maybe that's the problem.
Well, that's what religions are. You know, this is the one place where Muslims and Christians agree, because Muslims don't believe that other faiths, the principles and beliefs should be forced on them. So it is. Freedom is a two-edged sword. This is why, you know, oftentimes when I express libertarian principles around here, if you will, you know, I kind of get a little bit hammered because, you know, with freedom, you know, you got to take both edges of it. You can't blunt one edge with the hope of having the other edge. And unfortunately, our enemies know how to use that against us. And until we understand how to use it for us, they will have the upper hand. Aubrey.
We have discrimination going on all day, every day.
Yes.
How many places do you go into, restaurants, supermarkets, it says, no shirt, no shoes, no service?
And guys, too, think about it. Capitalism, to me, is the great indiscriminator. It destroys discrimination.
Absolutely right. It is a great equalizer.
Yeah, you've got the Chris, the Laura, the Nostradamus, the Aubrey, and the Johnny. Not the Carl, though. We're going to scratch Carl's corner tonight. We're going to push Nostradamus predicting the past into the future so that we can get to the present, which is continuing our conversation from before the break.
And there's no such thing as the law, but that's okay.
Once again, I do want to remind you, though, that this law that Mike Pence just signed, he says, has been upheld in 50 states by various courts at various levels and is practiced by some 34 states. And it is a tricky wicket, but at the end of the day, you know, capitalism to me is the great equalizer, as we were saying going out of the last segment. And as Christians, I just want to point this out. Sometimes if we turn the lost away, they remain lost. You know where I'm coming from, Aubrey? Now, you give a service. You preach a service every other Sunday night, right?
Well, not every, but once.
No, I mean every other.
Every second Sunday of the month.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I wish it was
pretty
more.
Pretty close, though.
And you want to tell everyone where, in case they want to come out and see you?
It's at the Haitian Church on West Colonial Drive in Pine Hills.
Do you your sermon in Creole?
No. That's why I'm there, because they want someone who can do it in English once a month.
Oh, come on, it's your accent.
Well, that and my stunning
good looks. Stunning good looks.
That's the thing. Is that like out there by Pine Hills Road in West 50, that far out?
Yeah.
Okay. And what time do the services start?
They start at 7:30 in the evening, and then praise, worship, and prayer is usually over by about 9:30. And then the announcements, the offering. So, yeah, 9:45, I start to preach.
Okay, so you can listen to us out there on the way and listen
as
to
Aubrey. As you figured that out, I phoned in the one time, didn't I?
The second Sunday of the month. But, you know, sometimes perhaps these Christian business people should look at, say, gay couples coming to them as an opportunity. An opportunity to perhaps save two more souls. And if you send them or turn them around and send them right on back out the door, I kind of don't understand how you can do that. Am I wrong, Aubrey?
Well, listen, we love the sinner, but not the sin.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
The same way, well, would you give in and practice Sharia law because a Muslim's coming in your door?
Right.
No,
but,
of course
but is
not.
Baking a cake for a couple who's getting married who you think shouldn't be getting married. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Does that violate your own particular religious convictions, or is it something you should be doing out of love for people who are looking for love?
Well, again, you can use that same argument, right? If you love a Muslim, why don't you go along with him to mosque?
Well,
all right. It depends on what side of the fence you're sitting on. And you know, I in my personal beliefs, I do home inspections for gay couples.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Even though you may not approve of their lifestyle.
I might not approve of their lifestyle, but I let my light shine.
Right.
And I take their money, which is as good as anybody else's.
Right.
And it goes into the mission field.
Right.
And the only thing that gets mitigated is the wind.
But you let
that's
your
That's about right.
But you let your light shine. That's the point I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, you but see, you can let your light shine without making a cake for them. You can express your beliefs to them and explain it to them and turn them You can turn them around with convictions.
Yeah, but there's these old adages. You attract more flies with honey than with salt.
Now you're calling gay people flies.
Wait a minute.
And he's calling me a honey.
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is, the baker could say, "Look, I'm going to bake this cake for you, but I would like you to consider believing and proceed to give them." The elevator speech for Christianity. And if they don't like it, that's too bad, because they came into his place or her place of business to get that cake, and this is what comes with it.
Oh, but now you're offending them because you're preaching to them and it's a place of business.
But you're going to give them their cake.
You've
negated their legal standpoint. Now, they can go away whining and crying, but in essence, they have no legal grounds now to sue you, and you've gotten in your 2 cents worth.
But as a person of faith, do I not have a First Amendment right to practice my faith my business?
But I think we have the godly right, godly responsibility, if you will, to practice our faith first. And the Christian faith says to love and to try to embrace. And Jesus didn't turn away the unwanted of that day. And what he did was he used those as opportunities to make his message more profound. And I think that these shop owners should be looking at it and from that sense, that this should be an opportunity to try to bring those who are lost to Christ.
Rather than holier than thou.
Well, like I said, it depends on what side of the fence you're sitting on.
Yeah, okay.
This reminds me a lot about that story that was on 2020 this past week about the guy who shot himself doing the viral video of pulling up to Chick-fil-A and berating the girl at the drive-up window.
He lost his job, right?
Right, okay. First, it was a two-minute spiel that he himself recorded. He himself put out onto YouTube, and he himself took the brunt of it. He was yelling at the girl behind the counter, she kept her cool. She just stood and smiled and said,
Is this the drive-thru or the counter?
The drive-thru. Uh-huh. And it was on the Chick-fil-A day on August 1st when the lines were around the block and down the road. He lost his job. He got a new job. He was a CFO of a corporation. And the next day he came in, his secretary said, "What the heck did you do?" His voicemail was filled up. He got fired that day. He got a new job. He had to relocate to get a new job. 2 weeks later, they said, "You should have told us about this video. You're fired." Now he brings that video with him on interviews, and he's been unemployed for the last 2 years. I think what he said was awful. But I think the guy deserves a chance. I think he deserves another chance to make his way and to atone for the stupid things he said.
You know what should happen? Chick-fil-A should reach out to him and offer him a job.
Would that be wonderful?
That's what I'm saying. That we as Christians have the responsibility. Our main responsibility as Christians is to bring other souls who are lost to Christ. And when we turn away the opportunities because we don't approve of getting our hands dirty or something, to me it's kind of counterproductive.
All right, let's go Old Testament quickly.
Okay.
What did God tell the Israelites when they went into the promised land? He told them to wipe out
the
enemy.
Don't drink the water.
Well, that might be too. Right. But he told them to go into the enemy's camp and to destroy them because of their sin. We in the New Testament, we understand that there's a difference between the sinner and the sin.
Right.
But if you're going to make the cake for this person, aren't you condoning their sin?
I'd like to get Johnny's take on this because Johnny.
All right. Since Aubrey brought up New Testament, I'm going to go New Testament on here. Go on Matthew 26. Jesus replied, where this is basically where the disciples are asking him, what's the greatest commandment? And he takes all 10 and condenses them down to these two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Basically, and I DJ weddings, so if someone came up to me, a gay couple, and wanted me to DJ their wedding, if I say yes, I'm not condoning what they do. I don't approve of what they do. But what Jesus says here is love your neighbor as yourself. If I show them love, I'm showing them the example of Jesus Christ as he has shown love to me. And in that case, I think if I said no to them, I don't know if I would be showing them the type of love that I've been commanded to show.
Because let me just elaborate. When you say no, you reinforce their preconceived notion, their already perceived notion of you as Christians of being bigoted, closed-minded.
But then why did they come to me in the first place?
Because they want a good home inspection. That's why. They want the best home inspection.
Exactly. Well, they may have been recommended to you.
There you go. We're talking about the baker now. It's because I'm... No.
Well, obviously, the reason they're doing this is because they want exactly the response that they got. And this is another reason why we should be smarter than this. We should diffuse them rather than infuse them.
In some cases, but what about Daria Monroe's group?
Okay, now, there would have to be limits. And once again, when you're talking about raising a child, I think you're talking about something different here. We're not talking about a capitalistic generally speaking,
it's not just a business transaction.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. And so that's where you would need government regulations.
Commodity.
And look, the government, the state of Florida is getting ready to, you know, put the pressure on them as it is. I mean, so, anyway, we'll go ahead and take the break. When we come back, we'll sort of wrap this one up so we can get to some Nostradamus and news from the past. But
that's what happens when government interferes with the free market system. They start to make laws, they start to discriminate, and they start to give special favor, and it's wrong.
And we'll be right back.
Well, and here we are. I was told to bring you back, and so we're heading back to the topic of cake.
Hey, no, I thought we were talking about the lady that introduced you, and she said she's willing to wrestle with you. Is your wife okay with that?
I don't know. I didn't ask. You know, don't ask, don't tell.
Oh. AM 660, The Answer is the station. American Adversaries is the show. 407-774-8255 is the number. Nostradamus' past is the time.
Nostradamus predicts the past.
Yes, I do. But I'm not talking about my past because there are laws about what you can say and can't say on the radio. So I think I'll just go with the things that happened this past week that we didn't get to, because we had so many great guests, so much great conversation with all kinds of people this past 7 days. No more McMansions in L.A. for the next 2 years. The Los Angeles City Council decided on Wednesday to temporarily restrict development in 20 areas. City Council unanimously passed the Neighborhood Conservation Interim Control Ordinance, or NCICO, which puts a 2-year ban on the size of new single-family dwellings in Valley Village, South Hollywood, La Brea. Lots of nice, fancy neighborhoods there. They also put a moratorium on the issuance of building and demolition permits in 5 proposed historic districts. They came because of a 2008 ordinance called the Mansionization Ordinance, which was supposed to eliminate McMansions. But, of course, developers found the loopholes. See, free enterprise found a way around existing laws, and so they put new existing laws all over it. So for about the next 18 months, you're not going to be able to buy anything more than a single-family dwelling of a moderate size in Los Angeles.
What do they term moderate?
Let's see. Doesn't have the numbers here, but it's something about the square feet.
I think
feet.
It was like 10,000 square
yeah,
feet.
Yeah, I was going to say 10, 15,000 square yeah. feet. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's yeah. moderate.
Yeah, the L.A. Building Industry Association says it supports the loud voices of a few and unfairly punishes homeowners with smaller residences and will decrease property values overall. So,
in essence, that's what it will do is stunt the increase in the property values, won't it, Aubrey?
It could, you know, but L.A. is different to Florida, you know. I mean,
well, that's for sure.
You know, yeah.
It's going to drop into the sea anyway.
From your lips, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
But, you know, when people get too liberal to live in L.A., they head to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a movie in which people are gathering around to celebrate someone's birthday. Have you ever noticed that they hardly ever sing happy birthday to you?
Yeah,
they never sing happy birthday to me.
Matter of fact, we got to play the Beatles song when we do it.
That's right, because if you sing happy birthday to you, even ideally, even in a little gathering of people,
it
doesn't have
party.
To be read, a children's party, whatever, you legally have to pay Warner Chappell Music, the music publishing arm of Warner Music Group, which owns the copyright to the song. A California musician, a film producer, and two New York music producers filed suit against the company last year after they paid fees ranging from a few hundred to a few thousand to license the song. And Judge George King of the Central District of California has listened to arguments in both sides of the case and has decided that he may issue a judgment that would put the song into public domain, meaning it wasn't subject to royalties. He could find Warner Chappell's copyright to be valid, or he could argue that he doesn't have enough information, schedule a trial, and punt it to the jury. So you might be able to sing Happy Birthday to You, the traditional song, and not have to give anybody a check for anything.
Yeah, not have to have somebody standing at the door watching out for the law to come and get you.
Bankrate.com has come out with a survey. They do this every year. The best and worst states in which to retire. They rank states according to their cost of living, crime rate, health care quality, state and local tax burden, personal well-being for seniors, and weather. The best state overall? Wyoming. The worst state overall? Arkansas. Each category, the best cost of living in America happens in Mississippi. Well, that's also one of the lowest standards of living in America. The lowest crime rate? Vermont. The best community well-being rank? Hawaii. Huh. So why does Obama want to move to New York? Did you hear that?
No.
He's thinking of not getting that mansion in Hawaii. He's thinking of going to the Big Apple.
Oh, it's tromping all over Bill Clinton's territory.
Could be.
Gang warfare up there in New York.
I hear Chappaqua's got some good houses up there.
Yeah.
Healthcare quality.
He better not even think about it.
State with the best quality of healthcare is Minnesota. The state with the best tax rate. Wyoming, which doesn't have a state tax and has very low local taxes.
Now, wait a minute. Didn't you say Wyoming for something else earlier?
Wyoming is the first overall.
And
they're number one in tax rate.
I wonder if there might be a little bit of a correlation there.
Well, the number two state overall, Colorado, is 19th in tax rate. So some of them correlate, some don't. It's kind of all over the chart. And the best weather, they say, is in New Mexico.
Oh, no, it ain't.
Florida. Okay, where's Florida? We're smack dab in the middle. We are 28th overall.
We're average. All right.
And we're average in just about everything. We range from 18th in community well-being to 39th in crime rate.
39th.
So if you want to retire, yeah, Florida's just an average place to retire.
Is that 39th highest?
39th out of 50. So we're in the bottom half in crime rate.
In other words,
we are not doing well when it comes to
38
crime.
38 other states have lower crime rates than
this
us.
This sounds a little fishy, Dennis.
It's got to be those people coming down from up north.
Could be. They come down, they steal stuff, and they go home.
Go home, yes.
You looking at me just because I'm from New York? Is that what you're saying?
No, because they vote twice. Once in New York and once in Florida.
That's true.
Hey, there's
they steal the election.
Yeah. A lot of gang activity goes on here, though.
And yeah, especially in the older communities. Yeah.
And lastly, you want to buy a new Ford that is going to follow the speed limit and not let you speed? Well, you're going to have to go to Europe. The new Ford S-Max is launching in Europe with a camera mounted on the windshield that will scan road signs on the side of the highway. And when the vehicle enters a 20-mile-an-hour zone, the system reduces its top speed to match. Rather than automatic braking, what it does is it limits its own velocity by adjusting the amount of fuel being pushed to the engine. If you need a burst of speed to avoid a collision or to get around something, you can do that by pressing a button on the console or a hard press on the gas pedal. But
there you go.
It will be monitored within the car. So if you are a perpetual speeder, they will find you.
That's I want to do to the Ford management. I want to do them an S-Max.
Yeah.
Well, they say this is supposed to reduce collisions, so why are you calling the car Smax?
There you go. That's what I want to do to the Ford
it
management.
It smacks of communism.
I would expect that from GM,
being
a government-run organization.
Not from Ford that didn't take a penny of bailout money.
Right.
Yeah.
Now they're sucking up. Well, I wonder what they want.
Yeah. And that is our news from the past.
All right. Well, I got one from the past, and we've kind of talked around this a little bit.
But it's going to be an issue that Scott Walker is going to have to deal with. And Scott Walker, of course, is one of the big names. He's declared himself the front runner in the presidential Republican side of the race. But he has a problem with the immigration issue. And part of the problem is it's beginning to look like he doesn't know where he stands on the issue.
He was for it before he was against it.
And
he's now for it again, depending on who he sits in front of.
You're absolutely right. You saw this story. On March the 13th, he was at a private dinner organized by New Hampshire. Of course, New Hampshire is one of the early states in the primaries season. New Hampshire Republican Party chairwoman Jennifer Horn at the Copper Door Restaurant in Bedford, New Hampshire. And at that dinner, according to three witnesses, he said that he supports amnesty. Well, he supports let me just say. I'm going to read from the Wall Street Journal article now. Mr. Walker's from Friday's Wall Street Journal. Mr. Walker's remarks, which were confirmed by three people present, vary from the call he has made for no amnesty, a phrase widely employed by people who believe immigrants who broke the law by entering the country without permission shouldn't be awarded legal status or citizenship. He also said, though, that they should be able to have a path to citizenship. And so the Walker spokespeople had to, and he ridiculed, a presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, for saying that people would self-deport themselves if they couldn't get jobs here. If you remember, that was part of Romney's immigration status, make it much more difficult. He also said during this dinner that we didn't need a border. He said, if you made it easier for people to come here legally, you wouldn't need a border.
That doesn't sound conservative to me. Border language culture?
His spokeswoman, Kristen Kukowski, basically denied it all. She said, we strongly dispute this account. And she encouraged people to ask Ms. Horn, who threw the party, the soiree. And late Thursday, an aide to Ms. Horn said that she declined to comment on the matter. So she's certainly not coming to his defense. And so Scott Walker he's not going to be the guy. I'm sorry. He's got a great record in Wisconsin, but it's going to take a whole lot more than that. And this wishy-washiness is not what we need.
He's coming apart.
Well, yeah, you know, people
at
don't,
the seams.
Very few people cross the border to sneak into America through the Wisconsin end. So,
yeah.
Firsthand, at least, he doesn't feel that. If he were from Arizona or New Mexico, he'd be talking a little bit differently.
Yeah. All right. And this is the kind of story I love here. Of course, we all remember the racial rant, the video of the University of Oklahoma fraternity on the bus.
Yep.
Well, did you hear what happened after that?
Well, sure, they got kicked out.
Well, after they got kicked out of the school. But something very interesting happened, which I think on Easter Palm Sunday, if you will, is a story we should at least spend a minute here talking about. This is from the Orlando Sentinel from Thursday. I was going to use this in WTF, but I'm going to go ahead and use it right now. A former University of Oklahoma fraternity member caught on video leading racist chants said Wednesday he's deeply sorry for his role in the incident and upset and embarrassed that he failed to stop it. Flanked by several Oklahoma City community leaders, including pastors and civil rights activists, Levi Pettit publicly apologized after a meeting he had with civic leaders at a Baptist church on the city's predominantly black northeast side. Some have wondered why I haven't spoken out publicly. The truth is I had a mix of pain, shame, sorrow, and fear over the consequences of my actions, he said. I did not want to apologize to the press or to the whole country until I first came to apologize to those most directly impacted. Amongst those who forgave him was black Oklahoma State Senator Anastasia Pittman, who stood beside him during the news conference. This is what the nation needs. We need, as citizens, to forgive one another, not hate one another. Only then can we fight the people who really hate all of us. And yes, they are indeed out there. But this is the story I'd like to see a whole lot more of. And if you want to listen to a whole lot more of us, stick around.
when America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Back to the American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen. I hope our listeners are a little faster than Nostra Dennis and Lair Adams, because they're still in the bathroom. But we're glad that you are here with us, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they say that there are two things that are guaranteed in life: death and taxes. Ooh. I only know, I know nothing about taxes except that I haven't done mine yet.
you still got about 2 weeks.
Yeah, so that's why we're going to talk about corporate tax right now, and we're going to shift this microphone back over to Christopher Hart.
All right, once again, 407-774-8255 is the number, and don't forget, during this half hour of the show, we're going to play our Who Said That contest, so you'll want to be ready for that, and it will be our traditional Who Said That contest tonight. And we are kind of talking about both death and taxes tonight, because we're talking about religion, and later on, we're going to have our Easter special, if you will, and we're going to be talking about the trial and the execution of God's plan. And I want to get to God's plan here more specifically in politically speaking here in just a moment. But did you see where Rubio is now? It's out. Evidently, he's come out of the closet, so to speak.
Uh-oh.
He's going to announce his candidacy for president on April the 13th. That's a Monday. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow, 1 week before our Hoot Nanny at Cafe Positano. So maybe we'll be celebrating that, too. But that means if he does declare, and according to many of his insiders that he is, going to have to give up his Senate seat. He will not be able to run for re-election. He won't give it up right away, but he will not be able to run for re-election, which means somebody else would have to, and he's up for re-election in 2016, so it'll be a wide open race. And, of course, Charlie Crist's name has already been kicked around, and certainly if he sees, you know, a wide open race, he's going to be laying out there on the beach salivating. And
He's going to have some competition, though. He's going to have competition because my representative— Alan Grayson
has indicated that he would like to run for that
seat. Yeah.
And maybe Alan West might run for it on the Republican side. Now, that would be a great
one.
Now,
he
just
moved here.
He just moved to Texas. You mean Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Yes.
She floated some balloons.
That's what I'd heard.
Yeah. So floated something else, too, I guess.
Fuzzy hair.
But before we get into this second hour topic that I want to get into here, I want to mention that last night Kathy Santomassino, Joe Terp, and his wife and I went over to Windermere for the first fundraiser banquet for the Wounded Officers Initiative. And we were invited, and thank you, Aubrey. And it was a very enjoyable evening in terms of the dinner and the show, the magic show by Jeff Capron, and the dance afterwards. It was a lot of fun, and the food was great. The sponsors that put that on for them were great. Got to sit with Raj and his wife Dee from DR Signatures Printing. Loved the food by Jesse Taylor's Catering, and it was a great event. But during the event, Scott Nylander, if you were listening to our show, I think last week, Scott Nylander, Peter Hernandez, and Jimmy Brown were all on our show. And
everybody knows Jimmy.
Yep. And they all got up and spoke. But at one point, Scott, during one of his presentations, he was kind of like the MC, he played a video clip of some of the things that happened to officers to get them, you know, wounded, injured. And it was very graphic. And the first clip showed a large black man with his girlfriend or whatever looking on behind the pickup truck. It was the video camera in the front of a police car. And he grabs a black woman cop who came up to about his shoulders, throws her down on the ground. And you don't see her, but you see him pummeling her face and stopping to take a breath and then going back and pummeling her some more. You see an incident where a cop is in a shootout where he's walking up on the passenger side of a pickup truck. The driver jumps out, pulls out a 9mm or something and starts bam, 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 bam. And then you see a cop going up on the driver's side of a car and a car coming along and hitting him dead on and sending him flying like a rag doll through the air. This is what our officers go through, and it happens every day. In today's Orlando Sentinel, for instance, on page A4, the international news, Boston officer in coma after being shot in face.
In the face. The guy unloaded the gun into his face, and these jerks are out there backing the guy that did it.
And he's still alive, though. And that officer, I don't know what their arrangements are up in Boston, but if he were down here, he would be looking at a lot of medical bills that will not be paid.
Yeah, he's still in a coma.
And induced coma. And it's a miracle that he's even alive. But if he survives, obviously he's going to have traumatic injuries that he'll have to be dealing with for quite some time. And a deputy first class, now forced into retirement, spoke there last night, a fellow by the name of Adam Pierce. He spoke from a wheelchair because as he was pursuing a drug dealer on South Orange Blossom Trail 10 years ago, the dealer, who they didn't know at the time, was violating probation, parole. He was, if he got caught doing what he was doing, what they were pursuing him for, he was going back to prison for at least 15 years. So instead of that, he pulled out a gun and proceeded to shoot. He used his taser. People say, well, why don't they use their tasers? He used his taser. It was ineffective against this guy. The guy was, the taser hit him in the left arm, which disabled his left arm, but it didn't disable him entirely. Disabled his right arm. Turned out the guy was left-handed, so while his right arm was hanging there limp, he pulled the gun out with his left hand and began to shoot. He shot off, Deputy Pierce in the head and in the neck. And this man is still works now back at the sheriff's department, but as a desk job from a wheelchair. And this is all too common. And while we, you know, have to tolerate the likes of Jess Jackson and especially Al Shakedown Sharpton, these voices, these lives which are crushed and shattered, go unnoticed, unheard. We'll be looking for more stories like this to make sure that they are heard, that they are noticed. And Wounded Officers Initiative is a great idea these guys have come up with. Go to woundedofficersinitiative.org to find out more and help them out, especially if you are someone who with some legal knowledge. They're looking for help there, but they're obviously looking for anyone's help, even if it is just moral support. That is the least which we can offer.
You know, when we read stuff in the paper, it's always about that 0.01% of bad cops that are out there.
Oh, they get the headlines.
Nobody ever writes about the 99.99 that are good cops.
Yeah. Especially when something like this happens to them. Yeah, it may get a little play in the media, but it goes away right away.
How many times does a cop dive with all his uniform on into a retention pond because a car has gone in there to save the person that's in the car?
With body armor, which obviously
weighs
to pull them down. Yeah, as a matter of fact, there was a deputy here locally, I believe, who was just injured last week in a car crash. Someone ran into him. And so it's, you know, they get it from all sides, and we don't nearly enough show appreciation for it. So no, I was honored to be there last night.
And I hate to say it, Chris, but I think eventually this is going to be a country where the black citizens in this nation are not going to be getting the protection that they're paying for and that they deserve because they've they basically kissed off the golden goose. They betrayed the people that they want to protect them. And you're going to hear an outcry in a few years about why aren't you protecting us? And it's like, well, you were damning us. Every time we helped you out, you were damning us.
All right. Okay. Let's see. That's Lair Adams. I'm Christopher Hart, Aubrey Kahn, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, all in the studio with you tonight. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. And we're just really getting warmed up. But don't forget, John Butler Book is going to be in live at 8 o'clock on 950 WTLN, our sister station, and Armed American Radio live from 8 to 11. So you got a whole lot of great live radio on this Sunday night, even though it is WrestleMania 31 night.
That's what DVRs are for. Come on.
And The Undertaker back one more time.
Is he?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he's back for redemption. And about a $13 million payday, something like that.
I just hope he can walk when he's done wrestling, because he can barely walk now.
By the way, speaking of paydays, did you see what Pacheco and Merriweather are going to get for their fight?
Manny, Pacquiao.
Pacquiao, Pacquiao.
Pacquiao.
Yeah, he's estimated to get somewhere north of $100 million, and Merriweather north of $150 million for a fight.
I can't believe it, because, you know, let's face it, boxing is passe. It's so hard.
It's bringing in the money somewhere.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
How much is Romney getting for his fight?
That's right. He's going in the ring against
Holyfield.
Yeah, what is that?
Right.
Come on. That's a put on.
What's he going to get
it's
out of it?
Put on.
I wish Holyfield would do to him, though, like Thunderlips did to Rocky in the Rocky movie. Remember? It was supposed to be a fundraiser just for fun, and Thunderlips beat him up.
Well, until Rocky did his thing.
What are you doing to me here?
Yeah, played by Hulk Hogan. All right,
And you know he lost his job?
Because of that, yeah.
That's
the
right.
The man fired him
because
he didn't want
Not
him to
Vince,
do that movie.
Not Vince, but his dad.
Yeah, the old man didn't want him to do that movie.
Told him, don't you dare, or I'll let you, and he did.
But it turned out to be the best thing for the Hulk's career.
And really for wrestling.
It was, yeah, absolutely. Lair mentioned some economic numbers that came out here this past week.
Ain't good.
No, they're not. Now, the administration would have us believe that they are, of course, but they're not good. And the Financial Times this weekend did an expose on President Obama's tax reform package, and revealed that his so-called corporate tax cut would be minuscule, if at all. Once you calculate it, he's taken away. Basically, what he does is he lowers the rate here, but he raises the rate elsewhere by taking away loopholes, if you will, in the tax code. But those loopholes are there to mitigate the high rate. So if you lower the high rate but take away the loopholes, you still have the high rate. So it's stifling to the economy. He's trying to make like he's doing something about it, but he's not. But there are two Republican candidates who do want to do something about it, and they've got the right plan. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Yes, we are, and no talk about squishing puppies like we did off the air. We're not going to do that here.
Magically squishing puppies so they're not hurt, and they come back just totally little cute and puppyish.
It's the American Adversaries, our Sunday night show, and man, we're almost half done. Hey, guess what, Chris? We need more time. But for now, let's just take the time we have.
I agree.
And let's ask our listeners, who the heck said that?
Of course, you know how to play this game, folks, or if you don't, it's real easy. We read a quote, you call us up, tell us who said it, and you win some prizes. And, of course, the prize package includes a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, $20 off your meal and drinks over there. And that is, of course, 4 miles west of I-4 on State Road 436, and that's where we'll be doing a live remote broadcast, and you can spend this gift card there that night if you choose to do so on April the 20th as we celebrate our 1,000th edition of the American Adversaries, which occurred on March the 11th past. And you will also receive a My Liberty Threads t-shirt made in America with a proud American patriotic slogans on each and every one. American made, American proud. MyLibertyThreads.com. MyLibertyThreads.com is where you can get more of those t-shirts. And don't forget to put in for the discount. And 407-774-8255 is our number. And if you know who said this, give us a call right now. Who said, if you can't make them see the light, then make them feel the heat? If you know who said that, give us a call. If you can't make them see the light, then make them feel the heat. We want to know who said that. 407-774-8255 is the number.
Chef Ramsay.
The inventor of the Easy Bake Oven?
Nope. But speaking of all those bakes.
I tell you, this is the worst food I've ever tasted in my life. You are the worst restaurant I've ever seen in my life. We'll make you all better. That's Ramsay.
All right. Okay, so 407-774-8255 is the number. If you know who said, if you can't make them see the light, then make them feel the heat. We need to make them feel the heat about the corporate tax, because that is where we can make the biggest bang for the smallest buck, if you will. I've been talking about how bad the economic numbers are. About a couple of weeks ago, Jason Furman, who's the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors to President Obama, wrote an op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal in which he touted their great success, if you will, with their economic numbers. Why, we're all the way up to 2.5% growth, which is, of course, very, very anemic. But, of course, a liberal, that seems big.
It's better than zero, Chris.
Well, you got to remember what liberals have things to compare with. They don't have anything big.
Mm. Yeah.
Not going there.
Yeah. No, they always go to Bill Clinton, though.
Right. I'm not sure if you want to talk about that there. I don't want to brag.
All right. And he goes on to talk about why the economy, he says, yes, we're up a little bit now, but overall, if you judge the economy in terms of the post-World War II era, it has been slowing and stagnating. And he's correct about that. But he gives several reasons, three in particular. He says it's partly due to temporary factors like commercialization of factories and things like that since World War II. He says the second factor is household income has been the increase in inequality. In 1973, he says the bottom 90% of households received 68% of the nation's income, in other words, about two-thirds, and today it's about a half. And he said also the third factor is the decline in the labor force participation rate, which we now know is definitely a huge problem.
Hello, Mexico.
Yeah, so we'll go ahead and accept his lay of the land in terms of the problem. Okay, let's say he's identified the enemy. Now what do we do about it? And stay with us, Mike. We'll get to your guess here first. His prescription, of course, the president's prescription is, as they put it, a range of measures to boost productivity growth over time, including, and we get all the litany of liberal mm-hmm. ideas.
Usually more taxes and more regulation.
And more spending. Investing in infrastructure, expanding overseas markets, reforming our business tax system, encouraging investments in technology, expanding education, and reforming immigration, all while reducing the medium and long-term deficit. While higher productivity is necessary for staying increases in income, it is not sufficient, which is why the president is also calling for steps to expand opportunity, such as increased minimum wage, expanded tax credits for low-income workers and the middle class, and a fairer tax system overall.
So while they're saying everything, in effect, they're going to end up doing nothing.
In other words, more of the same. That's their new idea, is more of all of the same.
Right, but I have a question.
Yeah, you haven't done enough of the same.
Right.
The infrastructure, wasn't that cured by the $700 billion
right. that all that shovel-ready money?
No, that was a miscalculation. That was a miscalculation because there are no shovel-ready jobs.
Well, but we need to spend more money on it.
Where's the money?
And then, of course, in order to make it easier for the businesses to come back, we must
increase regulation.
And all the businesses to provide more in furloughed work for child care, flexible work hours. That's a great one, isn't it? You just come in when you want, leave when you want. Yeah, that works.
The store's open from 9 to 5, so if you want to come in at 7 p.m. to work, that's fine. Sure.
And next time you go to McDonald's, maybe they'll have somebody there making hamburgers. Maybe he's not going to come in until
increase
he gets ready.
Increase minimum wage. Yeah, that'll really help.
That'll work.
Why don't we make it 25 bucks an hour?
Right.
And when 100.
All they
and
need
25.
To do,
yes.
All they need to do and
all we need is love.
Is eliminate the corporate income tax. And I'll tell you the 10 reasons why. But at first, I want to take Mike's phone call. He's been waiting. He thinks he knows who said, if you can't make him see the light, then make him feel the heat. Mike, thanks for calling, and we appreciate you being out there.
How are you doing tonight?
Excellent. Yourself, sir?
I'm hanging in there. I'm going to go with Herman Cain.
Well, you know, Herman Cain, I bet, has repeated it, and it definitely does sound like something that he would say, but
yeah.
That's not the at least the first person that had said it anyway.
I'm putting my dinger down. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah,
but no cigar.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question for Mike.
Yeah.
Go.
Mike, what happened to those women that came out during Herman Cain's attempt to become president that said all these bad things about him? Have you heard anything?
You know,
Do you even know their names?
A while back and shortly after it happened, I tried to find out anything, and they basically just disappeared.
Yeah, they disappeared as quickly as they came.
Yeah, and he had mentioned that a few times on his radio show.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's kind of funny how that happens.
It is, isn't it, though? You would think if they had legitimate claims, they could have pursued him in a civil
court.
Yeah,
he should be in jail, right?
No, well, at least he should be in court for, you know, fighting to save his money because they're suing him for it. But
thank you, Gloria Allred.
But they're not. That's right. Well, Mike, if you figure it out or want to take another stab at it, call us back.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Great show.
Thank you for being in the audience. We appreciate your comments as well. If you can't make him see the light, then make him feel the heat. It was not Herman Cain.
Cassius Clay.
It was not Cassius Clay, nor Cassius X, nor Muhammad Ali. All right. The fair tax includes doing away with the corporate income tax because it wants to do away with all income taxes. But barring that, the next best thing, in my opinion, would be to do away with the corporate income tax. Because as the fair tax people rightly point out, corporations don't pay taxes. They simply collect them from their customers or their shareholders and give them to the government. And so that investment incentive, that money is all lost. But it's not coming out to the government, but it's not coming out of the corporation's pockets. It's coming out of the spending public's pockets.
And you know what? It's a form of slavery.
It is.
Because the corporations have to do this for no wage at all.
That's right. They don't get paid.
They don't get paid to be the corporate income, to be the tax collector for the federal government.
And the big companies have hundreds of people on their payrolls doing exactly that.
I was going to say, worse than that, they have to pay huge salaries to a lot of people to do it, on top of paying those taxes that they collect.
Corporations must sue for reparations, right?
They should. Yes, there you go. You got a great idea. Let's get rid of the corporate tax, and then we'll talk about that. We've talked about this on the show before. I know I've advocated eliminating the corporate tax a number of times because, first of all, that reason, which we just said. Second of all, it would free up tons of money for investment that the corporations make here in the United States. It would also bring back money that they make overseas back to this country. It's in the trillions of dollars that they have now overseas, at least $2 trillion that would just immediately come flooding back to this country because we would go from being the worst game in town to being the best game in town.
Sure. It wouldn't be so immediate because it took a lot of time for some of these companies to relocate and to move their things overseas.
Well,
it'll take time to get it back, but it would happen.
Well, let's just say the effects would be felt immediately.
Immediately.
And they will only get better over time as that played out, like you just rightly pointed out. Not only that, but it would bring investment dollars from foreign corporations and foreign entities once again because we would go from being the worst game in town to the best game in town. But those are just a couple of reasons. And John Steele Gordon has written an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal where he cites the top 10 reasons to abolish the corporate income tax. I'm going to go through all 10. I'm not going to be able to do it this segment because we're coming up on the break and it's a hard break. But Mr. Gordon is the author of a book called An Empire of Wealth, The Epic History of American Economic Power. It's a huge volume, if you will, of economic history and economic politics. And he's come up with 10 reasons, which it makes it an even better sell. And by the way, both Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee have come out in favor of the fair tax and of doing away with this corporate tax that I'm talking about. This is what we need to rejuvenate this economy. And I'm going to go back to something that I said on our very first show and kind of tie all this together. Because on this Palm Sunday, I am here to tell you that God is at work. He has been very hard at work. And one of his biggest pieces on the board, if you will, as he sets up the future, is Barack Hussein Obama. I'll tell you what I mean by that when we come back.
The valley is low.
we still got some time left. I thought we're out of this section. Oh, my gosh. American adversaries are almost always here. And we'll be right back. Don't you dare go away.
Way through our three-hour tour. I hope you'll stick with us for the whole thing. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, Aubrey Kahn, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Jeff Sinis. We're coming to you live from AM 660, The Answer, and you got the American Adversaries. And don't forget our Hootenanny coming up April the 20th. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of cars out there, and there'll be clowns, too, so bring kids out. I mean, the kids will have a lot of fun, too. It's going to be a great evening, live remote broadcast, of course, starting at 5. Okay, we got some callers lining up for our Who Said That contest. We'll get to them in just a minute. If you want to get in on this real quick, now's the time to do it. If you think you might know who said, if you can't make them see the light, then make them feel the heat, now's the time to call it, 407-774-8255. I want to get real quickly, though, into some of these reasons why to abolish the corporate income tax. 10 reasons given by John Steele Gordon, and he's written a great history volume, if you will, about an empire of wealth, the epic history of American economic power. It's the name of the book, HarperCollins, 2004. Let me just go through these fairly quickly here. Number one, that engine of tax complexity disappears, and with it disappears the army of lobbyists in Washington working to get favorable tax treatment for corporations. In other words, you eliminate the tax code, you eliminate all this corporate cronyism and all of this lobbying and stuff that goes on in Washington, D.C., because it is all, well, maybe not all of it.
But, no more bribes.
Well, you would still have the regulatory arms that would be having to be dealt with. But the whole taxing end of it is gone. And as you say, the bribes and the inducements from Congress to get donations from corporations go away.
Who would we go to fix that?
I'm sorry, you got to get that microphone turned on. Jeff, mic's up.
Who would we go
to? Mic's, Jeff, we need mic's up. Nostradamus' mic.
Jeff's on the phone.
Oh, he's on the phone. All right, we'll get him in just a second. Sorry about that. Nostradamus. Second, corporate managers are currently most concerned with after-tax corporate profits because that is what the stock market cares about. In other words, the stock market wants to know what is the bottom line profit that a corporation is making. And income taxes are one of the expenses that the corporation has to account for. So if they want to increase their after-tax profits, they have to raise the price of their product or service to incorporate the taxes.
Well, you and I are both businessmen.
Yeah.
And so we know that we're going to be paying a corporate income tax. And I include it in my cost.
You're going to be agents of those payments from your customers.
Well, in my case, I'm praying for the day when I'll have to pay a tax because I'm losing money right now. But
now, who would we go to make these changes and to fix this? We'd go to the very people whose power would be taken away by making these changes.
Right. Which is why it's going to take strong, very strong, unusually strong leadership.
You mean like disciplined leadership?
It's going to take a guy like Ted Cruz, let's say.
Would then do an executive order.
He could do a lot of it through executive order.
He'd have to Who in the House or Senate is going to say, yeah, let's take our power away. Let's strip us of all our gifts.
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that, okay? Have faith. Number three, there would be no reason to tax dividends at lower rates. In other words, dividends could be taxed at a normal rate. Taxes would still come to the government because people still pay taxes. People own corporations. So they pay taxes on the dividends they get from the corporation. Only now it's only taxed one time instead of twice. It gets taxed at the corporate level now and at the personal level. This would eliminate the tax at the corporate level. Four. With sudden increased profits, corporations would increase both dividends and investment in plants and equipment. And, of course, that means they would have to hire a lot of people. Five, stock prices would shoot up, and that would affect your 401ks because people would be putting money in corporations because, guess what, they would be making more money that way. Six, the distinction between for-profit and non-profit corporations disappears. So you don't have to go through all these hoops and put yourself in political jeopardy and financial jeopardy because there isn't any such thing as a profit or nonprofit corporation. Seven, much of the $2 trillion overseas now would come flooding back to the country. Eight, The U.S. would now have the lowest income corporate tax rate, and that would draw in foreign investment, which would then make the foreign governments lower their corporate income taxes and begin to turn their economies around, too.
Could change the whole world economy.
10th, eliminating the corporate income tax would deal a blow to crony capitalism. Get rid of the corporate income. Yes, it's going to be very hard to do any radical change to the tax code. This would be the one soft spot, though, where it could perhaps actually, honest to God, get done. Unfortunately, the Republicans don't have much of a plan better than Obama's.
Well, because they don't want to do away with the current tax plan.
Right.
I'm sorry.
But this is where...
I mean, think about it. The corporate taxes, when you take it from one entity to the next before it gets to the buyer, is accounting for about 23% of the total price. So what's going to come down? Not just the cost of goods, but the selling price. So people will have more money to spend. They would be buying more luxury items.
You're making our case for us.
Yeah.
You're making our case for us. And this is why we're going to have to elect someone promising to go down that road. We're not going to get that from the wishy-washy guys. We're going to get it from the likes of Huckabee and Cruz and perhaps Rick Santorum. And we'll see what Rubio says.
The status quo is fine with most mainstream Republicans.
Rush Limbaugh has mentioned this for a long time, that no one is going to be able to change the tax code because the guys in Washington will never give up control. I disagree with that.
Believe me, I was of the same mind. I'd prepared taxes for many years. One of my professors...
It's too seductive.
One of my
Chris?
Professors at UCF asked me one time, because I was doing his taxes for a couple of years, he asked me that question. I said, no, they'll never give up those reins of power. But we can take it away from them. And by electing the right people is how the process begins. And you elect the right person at the top, and you begin to put that pressure on. Also, Barack Obama, like I said on the very first show, 1,000-some-odd shows ago, on that Sunday night, September 5th, 2010, I said I'd kiss the guy on the lips, because he has been such a gift to us by proving the failures of their policies. He has set the stage for the next president, should it be a true conservative president, to make some radical changes.
Yes, and Chris, he set the stage for both parties being wrong. I mean, let's face it, you can't dump all this on him. Both parties have been going down this road with taxation.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And he's also set a wonderful precedent. If a president wants something done, he has a pen, he has a phone. He can pull out the executive order.
And this is something that I mentioned on a show a while back. I'm writing it for our next an intel brief, is that he's done us a favor.
We can say without sarcasm, thanks, President Obama.
Yeah, we're going to give you a little bit of taste of your own medicine now, fella, but it's going to take someone who's willing to do that. Right. Someone who's not going to get in there like George W. or Jeb or
Jeb's
some
not.
Of
You're
the
right.
other ones who goes, well, I'm not going to be like President Obama. I'm here to tell you, one reason why President Obama is not being impeached right now is because it would be a very difficult case to prove that he has actually violated the Constitution. Now, before you finish screaming out there, let me elaborate. Okay?
I agree with you.
What I mean by that is he is absolutely testing the extent of the executive branch of government. But he, as the president, has every right to do so. It is up to the other two branches to hold him in check. But you cannot say that him stretching the executive authority is necessarily, by definition, violating the Constitution.
It's not his fault that they're not pushing
right.
back.
Well, that's right. The only people he's earning, Chris, right.
The burden of proof is much higher than that.
Yeah, but the people he's earning, Chris, is his own party. That's why he's allowed to do that.
That's my point. And that's why I say God is at work here. We could not be at this point of dramatic change back to the right were it not for this huge push to the left. That's one of the perverted rules of politics. Let's go. First, we got Mike, who's been holding. He called back, and Marshall's been holding. Let's go with Mike. Mike, we appreciate you calling right back. Who said, if you think you know, once again, who said, if you can't make him see the light, then make him feel the heat?
I'm going to go with Ronald Reagan this time.
Was it right? It was right.
Yeah, it was all Ronald Reagan. That was easy.
And this is what I'm saying. If we can't make these doggone Republicans see the light, then let's make them, by God Almighty, feel the heat. And one way to do that is to elect a guy like Ted Cruz as president. Am I wrong, Mike?
No, I got to agree with you.
All right, well, I appreciate it, and you're absolutely right. We're going to have to go to the break, but I take it Jeff got your information. If not, make sure he does get it. But thanks for calling, and appreciate you being persistent. And hopefully we'll meet you over at Cafe Positano's one of these good old days, if not on April the 20th.
That's right, our big party.
We had Marshall, who also called it.
Yeah, let's go ahead, Marshall. Marshall, if you're still on the line. Marshall, you there?
One of the greatest men that ever lived, Ronald Reagan.
He's looking over Larry's shoulder right at me right now.
That was easy. I shook his hand.
That's right. And
that's why it's broken.
Marshall, I appreciate you calling. Mike got in just in the nick of time ahead of you, but we'll give you a consolation prize. I got your address. Will we see you at the 20th celebration?
Most definitely, Chris.
Looking forward to it, man. We haven't seen you for way too long.
Yeah, I just got out of the hospital. I'm doing okay.
Okay, well, God bless you. We'll be praying for you. Have a great Palm Sunday and a great Easter Sunday.
Thank you, guys. God bless you all, my man.
Thank you. And
he has.
Thanks for all those encouraging texts you send me, too. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we want everyone happy and healthy and listening to the American Adversaries. We'll be right back.
And away we go with the fourth segment of the second hour of our show. If you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call at 407-774-8255. Before we get out of this presidential politics stuff here real quick, I just want to read a quote out of or at least a paragraph out of Peggy Noonan's article in this weekend's Wall Street Journal entitled "The Too Smooth Cruz." And she's talking about Ted Cruz and actually how she compliments him on his coming out party the other day when he declared his presidency.
Oh, that.
Him and his wife and two beautiful little girls. See if this doesn't sound familiar to something you might have heard on one of our shows. Peggy says, "His announcement Monday at Liberty University was a wow, really brilliant. It's giving future contenders announcement envy. They're all going to have to up their game and produce an announcement that's dynamic, rousing, and shows at least someone who is excited about their entry into the presidential race." Up their game? Who said that? Who said that?
Up your game. Hey, up your game.
Yeah, I know. I said on numerous occasions this past week after that speech when we were talking with Abe, Cruz set the bar. He set the bar high, and the rest of the crowd is going to have to literally. And I said, quote unquote, up their game if they want to get in on this contest.
Well, Chris, especially if you're Jeb Bush, because he kind of sort of pre-upped his game. Yeah. And now that Cruz has thrown his hat into the ring, I'm afraid for Jeb, it's going to be anticlimactic. I mean, there's nothing he can really do to top Cruz.
Well, not only that, but the styles are just so contrasting.
Yeah. It's like Cruz, you waited too late, Jeb.
Ted Cruz is really in a lot of different ways, not just on policy, but on delivery, on communication skills. He has seriously upped the game. And I think there's only a few of them that are capable of keeping up with him. Huckabee's one, Santorum's another one.
Probably Rubio. They're all really good debaters.
Yeah, and very smart guys. So we shall see. We shall see.
Jeb's part rhino, though.
Heavily.
Yeah. I didn't give percentages. Yeah. I said part.
Yeah. Aubrey, heavily.
Yeah, rhino. Yeah.
Although, you've been around rhinoceros. You're from South Africa.
I know what rhinos are.
You had one as a pet, didn't you? You used to pet those little things.
Used to chase them for 50 miles.
Rub their horns. Tickle their ears.
He'd chase them for 50 miles at a time across the African plains.
So it settled on its back.
By the way, there is a great run coming up in Lake Helen, and it's going to be on
Aubrey ate monkey brains.
April the 11th.
That's right. April the 11th. That's a Saturday. Registration is 8 a.m. at the Power Volleyball Academy at 565 South Lakeview Drive. And we'll be a sponsor of that event. So I hope you can come out that Saturday morning and join us. That's just a couple of Saturdays from now. So please put that on your calendar. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But I want to get to our guest right now. You know, there are a lot of states having to deal with transgender political issues, if you will. The state of Florida right here is working on a bill in the state legislature having to do with transgenders and, for instance, which bathrooms they should be using, medical facilities, housing facilities, that sort of thing. And this is an issue being dealt with all over the country. And then there is also the issue of transgender in terms of a lifestyle, so to speak. And so what we have done is Sunny, our California glow girl, in her apartment community, which she manages, she has a friend who is going to join us on the show today and I believe is a transgendered individual. Is that the proper way to say it, Veronica Little? Thank you for being on our show tonight.
Well, first of all, yes, thank you. But you can call me Veronica for short.
Okay.
You don't have to call me transgendered Veronica.
Okay, but would that be the proper way of saying it, basically?
Transgendered is what I am, but I am considered a non-op. I don't do any surgeries.
Okay.
And basically, I do hormones, and I live full-time as a female.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to get straight here.
Well, before we go there,
okay,
I just want to recite an article, a couple paragraphs out of an article that appeared actually in yesterday's Orlando Sentinel. So, once again, divine intervention at work on our show. Get a front-page article in the local paper, and tonight, with no planning, we didn't know this was going to happen, Veronica, but let me just read a couple of paragraphs, because I want you to know that we love and respect you as a human being, and that's one reason why we have you on the show, so that we can hear your point of view. But this part of this article, it's about a local transgendered individual named Danielle Hunter, who happens to be a popular entertainer here. She is recovering from a suicide attempt and had a situation at the treatment facility where she was as to where she should be housed. Should be housed with the men or with the women. And she said this. She said, and I just want to get your feelings on this. She said, being transgender comes along with its own psychological issues. It's not that we're special or any different than anyone else, but we should be able to be treated like other human beings. I agree with that, and I just wanted you to know that we respect you as a human being and do not look at what you're doing, you know, with your life in that respect as anything criminal or to be, you know, disgusting, so to speak.
Well, and I do agree with you on that. Having been through my own mental issues as far as being okay with me, the first thing I had to do is love myself.
Amen.
And that is a key for anybody. I'm sorry. I don't care if you're a man, woman, child, or green or purple.
Well, that's part of my question. Before you go a little bit further, Veronica, what do you call yourself, may I ask? I'm Blair Adams.
Hi, Blair. I call myself Veronica.
If you were to put your name on a census list.
If I was doing an application,
yes,
and they said male or female, I'd put female.
Okay. All right. Well, that helps me out. Thank you.
And I want to ask you a question, Blair. Why does that help you out? Wouldn't that be, like, automatic?
I'm sorry. Wouldn't it be automatic? Oh, no. What would be automatic? Yes, sir. Male or female would be automatic to me. In my lifestyle, and the fact
No. I'm asking you if the person's name is Veronica, you can't really get it mixed up, can you?
Well, there's a lot of names that can go either way. Pardon me.
Such as like Sean or.
I know, but Veronica, don't get me the wrong way. I wouldn't go that way. Seriously, if a person gives me their name, though, that doesn't tell me a lot. It really doesn't. Your voice does. The fact that you sound like a very reasonable person. I was just trying to go to understand which devil direction.
Devil advocate, say, away, were you?
It helps me. I'm pretty dumb, you know. And too many choices mess me up.
Well, first of all, I do want to say thank you for the opportunity here, because, gentlemen, there's not many people in Florida who feel the same way as you do. Having lived there for almost 11 years, I had to leave because of the discrimination
really?
That I found.
Well,
in jobs.
Well, okay. I was going to ask you what you meant by discrimination. In other words, people would not hire you because of your choice.
Right. They were too afraid that somebody might be offended. Hmm. But wouldn't that be offensive to me?
Right. Now, Veronica, question, Mr. Dennis here. Why is surgery not an option for you? A lot of people choose that. Why have you decided not to?
I don't need it to be a woman.
Can I ask you this, Veronica? I studied some of these issues when I was in college, and I do know that at birth there is a significant number of children whom the medical personnel cannot determine at birth which sex or which gender the mm-hmm. infant is. Was that your case?
No.
Okay.
No, I was born atomically correct.
Okay.
What you're talking about is hermaphrodite.
Okay.
Which is
right.
a completely different thing.
And very rare.
I have a friend like that, yes.
Well, to be honest, it's not as rare as you think.
No, it isn't. You're right.
Yeah, I was actually astounded okay. when I learned that.
And to bring it real home to everybody, transgendered females to male and males to female, there's more of us out there than you think.
And you mean you're just passing and we don't know?
Exactly.
Okay.
And these are called stealth.
Okay.
These people live in stealth.
Help me clear up a little bit of confusion. What would be, for instance, the difference between a homosexual man and a transgender, other than that they get the tooling package shifted around?
Well,
so to speak.
He pointed out transgender surgery.
Let him answer me.
I can't. Her.
I'm sorry, Veronica. Let please.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
And if you can remember that, just say Veronica.
Okay, thank you. Easy enough. Thank you.
All right. So the way it works is this, okay? And, God, I just lost my train of thought. I hate when that happens.
Hey, do that too, buddy.
That's okay. No, but I was...
Miss. Excuse me, miss.
Veronica, I was simply asking you, what would be the... Why would we call you transgendered, for instance, instead of gay?
Okay. Well, first of all, I like heterosexual men.
Okay.
I like heterosexual women, too, but that's beside the point.
Okay.
The thing is this. The difference is that a gay man likes gay men.
Okay.
A transgendered woman likes heterosexual men and will go shopping with the gay man.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
I understand that.
Then there's also the drag queen who does the hormones too and looks really female, but they like gay men also. But that's usually a drag queen.
All right. Well, one of the political issues, at least the one here in the state of Florida, is, you know,
the bathroom.
Exactly. And
I'm going to tell you a little story about that.
Okay. Go ahead.
When I first came out, I'd been out for about 2 years. And I went into a Food Lion. You guys still
Oh, yeah, I know Food Lion.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I just had to go to the bathroom. So I went into the women's bathroom and sat down and did my thing. And there was a woman that came in there after me and was looking through the stall, looking at me. And I thought it was kind of weird. And then then I came out and I was doing my shopping and she was following me around a little bit, which I have that happen every once in a while. It doesn't really bother me much.
Now, real quickly, but, let me ask you this real quickly, Veronica. Do you look like a female? Do you dress like a woman?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Did this woman see your package?
I don't know, to be honest.
Okay.
I wondered. Her head, and I wasn't looking through her eyes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So she followed you?
Regardless of that.
Did she confront you in the store?
It didn't really matter.
What?
But as I was checking out, She brought the manager over, and the manager says to me, and very bluntly says, "Do you know what bathroom you're supposed to use?" And I looked at him direct in the eye, smiled, and I said, "Yes, I do. Don't you?"
All right, listen, if you'll stay with us through the break, it's a hard break, so we can't move it. But if you'll stay with us, and on the other side, Sonny's going to join us as well.
That's fine.
Okay. Don't go away, folks. We're talking to Veronica Little. And she's transgendered. If you have any questions for her, now's your chance to call. We'll be right back.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Welcome back to the show, folks, for hour number three of the American Adversaries Classic 3-hour tour, where you never know what you're going to get. And you are listening to us live on AM 660, The Answer, and we'll be here until 8 o'clock, at which time we'll turn it over to John Butler Book, and Pastor Book will be on up the dial at 950 WTLN. Got a great show, great wordsmith, great witty mind, and then, of course, Armed American Radio is live right here from 8 to 11. A lot of great live radio only here in Central Florida. 407-774-8255 is the number. I'm Christopher Hart in the studio along with Lair Adams, our executive producer, Nostradamus, our WTF News Hound Johnny Guns, Aubrey Kahn, our white African American, and Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. And of course, Aubrey is our great sponsor of ours, Firm Foundation Home Inspections. On the line right now, we are talking with Veronica Little, who is a friend of our very own Sonny. That would be, of course, Patricia Summerlin, our California glow girl. Let me welcome Sonny to the lines too right now. Sonny, how you be doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. Doing over there in sunny Florida?
We're doing excellent.
We're sunny.
Yeah, we got...
There you go. We're definitely sunny here.
All right. Well, we got your friend Veronica Little on the phone. Let me ask you real quick. How did you two meet?
She came to me, my property, and I rented her an apartment.
So you had no problem? You didn't know discrimination in that sense?
Absolutely not. Remember, guys, I told you I'm from Hollyweird.
You know? Hey, you just enough called said. Your friend weird? Come on.
That's not what I'm saying, guys.
I know.
I believe in equality, and everybody to me, no matter what, sex, race, gender, deserves equality, and you know that, and I'm a woman, and I stand tall and proud on that issue.
Well, the way I look at it is we're human beings.
That's right.
For heaven's sake.
That's right.
And we all bleed the same.
And I'll have to be honest with you, Veronica, I'm a Christian, and I don't, you know.
So am I.
That was going to be my next question to you. Do you go to a Christian church, and if so,
yes, I do.
And what?
I don't go to a Catholic church.
Okay,
I don't go to a Protestant.
Neither does Chris.
I go to a non-denominational Christian church.
Oh, okay, I was going to ask you that. How long have you been a Christian? When did you give your life to Christ?
I got saved in about 94.
Was that before you?
Yes.
And how did that happen? Let me. You don't have to go into great detail, but was it something that was gradual, or did something happen to you that brought this about, so to speak?
Well, I had been feeling different since I was 5 years old, and to be honest, I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't even know about transgendered. I thought I was gay for a very long time. But once I saw and talked to a few people that were transgendered, I realized that it was something that I identified with 100%. But to answer your question, it is a progression. I'm not the same person I was when I first came out. And I'm going to tell you that's about the only thing that gays and lesbians we have in common. I mean, except for the discrimination, obviously. But,
sure.
But as far as the identifying, there isn't a day that doesn't go by that when I introduce myself, somebody does not say to me, "Oh, I have a gay friend."
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, how does that
fit into your equation?
That's two different things.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I was actually a bit surprised to read that a number of gays actually discriminate against transgendered people.
They do. Yes, they do.
Why do you suppose that is?
Because the way a gay friend of mine said to me, he says to me, "Well, if you're going to like men and you're a guy, you should just be gay."
Okay.
And I think that's the biggest problem, is that they think that that's where it stops, and it doesn't.
And
it has to do with the body identification, the dysphoria of when I look in the mirror. From the time I could remember looking into a mirror, I always saw a little girl. I never saw a boy, ever.
And so in fact, you mentioned that in the previous segment, is that you don't view yourself as gay. You view yourself as a woman in a man's body, essentially.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't help the cards God gave me, but I sure can work with what I have. Now, a lot of people say, "Well, God doesn't make mistakes," but I guarantee he has a heck of a sense of humor.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Veronica, can I ask a question? Do you have a preference over male or female lovers? Traditional male and female lovers?
He said that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I prefer a person that's going to love me as much as I love them.
Gender doesn't matter.
No, you said you prefer heterosexual men.
And heterosexual women.
And heterosexual women.
Yes, but again, it's not about that either. If a troll wanted to love me as much as I love them, then I'd be okay with that too. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, you're lucky.
All I want is to be loved.
You got a bigger spectrum.
As much as I love them.
Right, you're expressing an innate natural human instinct that we all want to be wanted and loved. And
exactly. And it has nothing to do with gender.
Exactly.
And I'm going to tell you guys, this is the one thing that everybody thinks that it's a choice. It's not. I had no choice. If I stayed the person that I was, you would not be talking to me.
Well, that's where, you know, there is a lot of debate in the medical realms, I guess, and this goes back to other medical things as well. But
what I wanted to say about this woman committing suicide.
Yeah, well, she tried to. And I was
right. And this is the problem with a lot of people. They don't do the inside work first.
How do you mean by that?
You have to do the inside job first. It's an inside job. If you're not okay with who you are, then changing your gender is not going to make a difference.
Right. Changing parts will not fix the problem.
Right. And I was
right, because no matter where you go, there you are.
And obviously, Danielle Hunter is going through some identity issues, if you will. Are you completely mm-hmm. comfortable with your life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a couple of boyfriends. I have a few girlfriends. I don't get to see them often enough.
Can I ask you this?
And here's the great part about it.
What?
I do not hide who I am.
Well,
looks at me weird, I say I'm transgendered, and I don't make no bones about it. And it's all because of the fact that I do not want to die.
So you don't want to surprise somebody, so to speak.
Well, the point is this. Guys in particular have the hardest time, and I'm going to be real blunt here. Guys have this innate feeling that they're being fooled, and that's mm-hmm. not the truth. All we are trying to be is true to ourselves.
So do you let someone know early on in the relationship that you're transgenderedness?
Yes, and the biggest reason is how, if they're going to love me, they got to know who I am to love, right?
They've got
well,
to
that's
take,
honest.
They've
well,
got
that's...
to take part in the expression, the whole package.
That's honest.
Exactly, exactly. And the boyfriends I have and the girlfriends I have, they all know who I am and what I am, and they all accept me, okay? And but I'm going to tell you, I have no acceptance or very little acceptance from family members.
And is that always – did they know early on what was going on?
Some did. My mom did before she died. She actually took me shopping the weekend after I came out.
So your mother accepted you?
Yes, and she's the one who named me Veronica because my name used to be Ronnie.
I see. Sonny, let me ask you, did you know Veronica was a transgendered individual when you first met her?
Yes. Because, again, I'm not, I'm from Los Angeles. So I, when she came to my door, I addressed her as a she, and she'll tell you this. And from that point on, I've had so much respect for this woman, and that's how I view her as, guys. No different. And I go out, we've went to sushi with her, everything. And
Great sushi place.
Yes, by the way. And people are accepting Veronica. I don't see too many rudeness, except I will say my own maintenance man made a few mistakes with her in the beginning. But now he definitely will not do that, not in my presence. Because, again, it's a fine line when you're in business. You know, you can she could very well sue Biltmore or sue him as a maintenance man on a personal level for calling her a male.
Is that
she's not?
And well, that's in Arizona. That's not the case in every single state.
Yeah.
Like Florida, for instance, you guys are having this big old debate about bathrooms. Let me clear one thing up. Every single transgender, male and female, male to female, female to male, can use a federal bathroom without question.
Federal bathroom. Okay.
And what I'm saying is such as if they were to go to court and they, as a woman, they can go into the women's bathroom without any harassment.
Right.
Because the EEOC, which is the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission,
right,
put their foot down and then the federal government followed suit.
Well, but women's bathrooms have stalls, too, with doors on them. They're different than men's restrooms where you have a urinal, and women won't stand for that.
And which begs the question, what do you think I'm going to do in there? Look under the stall?
Yes, I agree with you.
That's as ludicrous as trying to put on somebody else's panty.
All right, well, listen, let me say this.
I tried that.
Let me say this. Part of the problem people have with transgendered individuals using the bathrooms that they identify with is that there will be people who will basically take that opportunity to do, if you will, perverted things that will not be transgendered people, but will use the opportunity
scope out women
to do things like that. Yeah. And so would you be
pervs. Well, the pervs out there.
Let's address that for a minute.
How would you do so? How would you address that
I'm
concern?
I'm going to tell you, I was forced when I was in Florida to use the men's bathroom. I was forced. And during that time, I had been raped. In a woman's bathroom in Florida.
In a women's bathroom?
Yes. Or a men's bathroom.
You said men's.
Men's bathroom.
Yeah.
And because these guys just did not want me to be in there. So they figured they would teach me a lesson.
Well, what about three?
So it's a matter of safety.
Well, what if there were three bathrooms, so to speak?
And I'm gonna do a shout out to Target because that's exactly what they do.
Is that right? I was not aware of that.
They do what they call a family bathroom.
And you'd be okay with that?
Well, other restaurants have that too. But
I can add to that, guys. Now I guess in New York and even in Los Angeles, they're unisex. Our clubs now are unisex.
Well, that's not what we're talking about.
Men and women's.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about.
Do you have a problem with that, Sonny?
I personally do because, again, I have too many fans and stalkers as it is.
Well, Veronica, God knows. You wouldn't want unisex either if I'm...
Yes, I would.
You would want a unisex bathroom.
Yes, for one reason only.
What
we are
that?
All human beings, and if everybody treats everybody with respect, there's not a problem. Would
if only.
Yeah, but it's,
exactly.
If it were any, any other room of the house,
and
I would disagree.
And granted, it's not that easy, gentlemen. I do get that.
All
it's
right.
not that easy, and you're right. There could be the rogue person that decides to put on pantyhose and a skirt and jump into the women's bathroom and start looking.
Wait a minute.
But guess what? That's called an indecency law. It's covered anyway.
We're also talking about children here, especially little girls and things like that.
And I'm going to tell you something. Pedophiles get away with a lot.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I'm just saying as far as exposure.
And there are laws against that, too. It has nothing to do with which bathroom they use.
Yeah. Hey, Veronica, I want to thank you for being with us tonight and spending so much time helping us deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate it. And maybe we can get you back on in the future, especially as we see how this legislation plays out. But we're praying for you.
I did send you guys some websites that you can put on your website. But I also want to make a shout out to PFLAG, okay? Because PFLAG is a very big advocacy for not only the gay and lesbian and bisexual, but also for the transgender. They offer help. And you can also, if anybody wants to go to my Facebook page, which is Veronica K. Little at Yahoo, or email me for that matter, I'd be happy to answer any questions or even have anybody. Who wants help or wants to get some information on how they can get help, I'd be happy to do that.
Speaking of getting help, when you were young and you were going through this process, at any time were you counseled or anything of that nature to deal with this?
Before I was in a foster home, a group home, when I was a teenager, and the gentleman there taught me coping mechanisms on how to be okay with me.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Veronica, I'm glad that you've come to Christ, and we'll be praying for you and hope that you do not suffer discrimination and that you are treated with respect as a human being. And
well, the first person that does that is me.
And well, that's just it. But I'm glad, as I said, that you've come to Christ and given him your life and accepted his grace. And
I had to.
You had
he
to?
He died for me.
I'm sorry?
I had to. He died for me.
Amen.
Amen. And
That's right, Veronica. And,
that's
and
the season.
I will say, guys, out of all my tenants, she's the best. And she actually helps me on the property here. And she's just a really wonderful, wonderful person.
Veronica, do you have a job now?
Yes. I've had it for going on 4 years now.
You don't have to tell us where, but what do you do?
I help students find good colleges.
Oh, you're like a counselor, guidance
Placement.
Counselor?
Well, the best part is I'm being of service. And that is the reason why I do it.
All right. Well, thanks again. We appreciate it. God
Thank
bless you.
You
and happy Easter to you.
Yep.
All right, Sonny, don't go away. I got a question or two for you. You still there?
I'm here, guys. Yes.
Does Veronica suffer discrimination, if you will, from other tenants there?
You know, she's came up against a few, sure. And she'll address it with me and we'll handle it. Or she addresses it for herself in front of them and she'll tell me the situation. And we've even had police that came up on a situation, and she handled it quite well. And the police respect her. You know, that's the way it is. I mean, you know, they are human beings just like we are. They live here in our society, and just like gay and lesbians do. We can't, this is, you know, and as the years go by, it's only becoming, you know, more and more. You know, there's more transgender, I think, up here, I don't know, than L.A., but Veronica probably could have, you know, told you that.
More in Phoenix than L.A.?
Yeah.
I tell you what, did you get your hands on that Tim Robbins?
I sure did.
All
yeah.
right, well, stay with us through the break then, because I want to talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Sandy, yes, I wanted to talk to you about this Tim Robbins thing while we just have a couple of minutes left here. By the way, you know, WrestleMania is going on in Los Angeles tonight, I think, isn't it?
You know what? I've heard it's out, and they're doing the HOFs and great speeches, and the Big Show won. You know, Big Show, guys. He's my favorite.
Big Show won his match already?
Yeah.
Paul White. He won the Battle Royal.
Big Show won the Battle Royal.
All right.
Okay. Where is it, Johnny? Where is it? The match?
It's in L.A.
I think, now it's probably in L.A. Was up in Santa Clara?
San Francisco, what we were just told. Levi Stadium. But Jeff.
Levi Stadium. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And the Big Show is one. All right. So we'll see what happens with The Undertaker later on.
Yep.
Have you ever met The Undertaker?
I believe I have years back, and I hopefully will soon again. We'll see who's going to make it at the CACs, which is in April 12th through the 15th. We're all going to be there, and it's looking pretty packed.
All right.
Pretty big. And you know Brian Blair puts that on. He's the head of the CACs.
Yep, he's a great friend of ours. Lives over here in Tampa area.
Yes.
All right, let's talk Tim Robbins. Of course, Tim Robbins is known for being outspoken as liberal.
Very liberal.
Which makes this editorial that he wrote a bit surprising for the LA Times. Now, let me just summarize if I can. You correct me if I'm wrong, but he basically says in the editorial that he's against the unions requiring small theaters where they have live plays. He's against them requiring a minimum wage for the actors, saying basically that it will put these small theaters out of business. Is that what he says in a nutshell?
Well, I mean, I've got the whole thing here. He's talking about like the True of the Geffen Playhouse and the Mark Taper Forum, I guess.
Yep.
Only about 55% of the center theater group's budget comes from ticket sales.
Right.
Where does the rest of the money come from? So he said generous benefactors. God bless them. But he said if the top theaters in L.A. have to rely on the subsidies, what does the fantasy come from? That small theaters with, say, 40 seats and no staff are taking in the dollars. And he said if equity is aware of blatant violations of the spirit of the 99-seat plan, then it should use its power against those producers.
In essence, what he's saying is the unions, by requiring actors to be paid in these small theaters, are, in essence, going to force them out of business. Is that not what he says?
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah. But what's surprising, of course, is when he was standing with people on Occupy Wall Street, what they were demanding would be higher wages. And so this seems to be a bit of a turnaround for him, is it not?
Yes. And, you know, I'm really part of, you know, since I've been an actress all my life, I have to go for the little man and the little theaters and whatnot. And I think higher paid salaries, not that some of these actors are getting paid way too much.
Right.
That's for sure. Tim Robbins is a great, great actor. I happen to like him as an actor, and I was shocked in reading this. Well, he hasn't did much lately, you know.
Shawshank was excellent.
Excellent. But isn't he married to Susan Sarandon yet, too?
No, they're split up now.
Done. See, that tells you how much I follow him, but I love her.
Yeah, but the point that I'm working toward is this. What he has discovered is that when you impose high minimum wages on employers, whether it's a small theater operator or let's say it's a diner or a restaurant, that what you do is, in essence, you do not improve the situation for the employees because you force the place to close up. And so now they're entirely out of a job altogether. So what good does it do to say you have to pay them $15 an hour if the place where they work is going to close its doors?
Yeah, if they're not taken in more, yeah.
Right, so
able to stay alive.
Right, yeah. So hopefully he will understand that the same principle that works for small theater operators works for McDonald's and other operators all over the country where the president and others are demanding higher minimum wages. It is counterproductive to the business community.
Yes, exactly. But again, some of these, like McDonald's you mentioned, which is... should never run out of money, you know.
They're doing badly now.
Well, really?
Yeah. Yes, they are.
And McDonald's owner-operators, 90% of them are small businessmen. They're entrepreneurs.
Yep. Well, I've seen all these things, though, that they're coming out with their own clothing line now, which is ridiculous. I'm not going to go wear hamburgers on my clothing. Yes.
They're doing everything they can to survive.
Well, that's funny. I wanted to wear, you know, my, what is it, Big Mac on my shirt? I don't know.
Well, if you're a sloppy eater like I am, I wear my Big Mac on my shirt anyway.
Hey, Sonny, we are out of time tonight. Happy Easter to you.
Yes, happy Easter to you guys, too, and many blessings. And, you know, God is good, and we'll thank God, and happy Palm Sunday.
Make sure Veronica knows we are all praying for her.
Yes, I sure will. She's really a sweet woman. Thank you guys for having her on as a guest. Much appreciated. And I thought it could shed some light, you know? And open up the view, and it certainly has for me having her here on my property.
Okay.
You want tag team wrestling? We got that. You want battle royale? We got that. You want intragender wrestling? We got all that. It's Sunday night at Sea American Adversaries.
You never know what you're going to get.
In fact,
box
we have
chocolates. Box of chocolates.
It sure is. Don't stick your finger in there, though.
No.
And it's about that time of the show when we think about all these strange possibilities and say to ourselves, WTF? That means...
Oh, go ahead.
It's time for Johnny Guns and the WTF News. Guns.
And that box of chocolates, don't reach your hand in there because Lair has licked all of them.
Ew.
So. All right, I just got to start off here with a little announcement that I've been told by my family that I have to be funny this week, otherwise I'm not allowed to come home for Easter.
Ooh, pressure.
You're always funny.
I've got a sleeping bag.
If this week's WTF news is like the other one, somebody else is getting my chocolate bunny. So,
All right,
here we go. Story number one, Daryl Alexander. We're going to start off with a good story here. Daryl Alexander has been selling automobiles for over six decades, and he just celebrated his 100th birthday last week at White's Mountain Chevrolet in Casper, where he still works 6 days a week. Alexander made his first automobile sale in 1949 when gas was just 17 cents a gallon, and he says that he has no plans to retire from the dealership. Customers say they value Alexander for his honesty. He said, told a local TV station, "Maybe I've missed sales because I didn't lie to them, but that's okay." Brad Follinsby, the dealership's general manager, has said that Alexander is an inspiration to us all, as far as the drive he has. Alexander credited the man upstairs with giving him a long and happy life. He told the Casper Journal, "Work is part of what keeps him in good health. As long as I can get out of the house, you sit around the house and watch TV or something, and you don't last long. Which means I've probably got about 2 years max left on this earth, thank you to wrestling and The Walking Dead." All right, story number two here. A former Home Depot employee says the company fired him over an inner lip tattoo of his ex-girlfriend's name.
Inner lip?
Inner lip.
Who's going to see it?
Which lip? We'll get to that.
Okay.
The girlfriend's ex-name, or the ex-girlfriend's name? Isis.
Oh.
Kurt Cottrell said, "Honestly, I didn't know what the acronym meant until just recently. While working at a Home Depot as a Home Depot tool demonstrator, he said that he overheard the term during a conversation and showed his tattoo to a coworker. Home Depot fired him soon after." The Home Depot spokesperson Stephen Holmes told CNN News 12 in New York that the termination was a personnel matter and the decision wasn't just based on the tattoo. Kirk contends that he is not a terrorist and he got the tattoo 4 years ago. He said he's no longer with the woman whose name is depicted. And he is reported considering legal action against Home Depot. Now, the moral of the story, folks, is never, never, never get your girlfriend's name tattooed anywhere on your body. You want to say something, don't you?
I need some liposuction.
Yeah. I was going to say he really should have explained to his boss that he is just a fan of the new president of Egypt, you know, the General Sisi. And you're reading it upside down. That's all.
All right, story number three here. We're going to finish off in Utah, where a Utah restaurant owner who signed bearing a bull statue with a large, you know what,
is providing controversy because he says there's a conspiracy against his business. The well-endowed bull sculpture prompted complaints after it was installed outside of barista's restaurants in Hurricane, Utah. A change.org petition calls on the city of Hurricane to refuse to renew the business's license for the restaurant. Stephen Ward, owner of the eatery, said he's planning a lawsuit against the city after officials refused in January to upgrade his limited liquor license. He said, "They hate me and all. All I've done is bring this town movie stars and quality and class. And there has been a conspiracy from the mayor to the police station, to the council, to all the haters in this town to disrupt, destroy, and cause harm and disrespect my business." Hurricane Mayor John Brommel says the city refused to upgrade Ward's liquor license because the business is too close to Hurricane High School. Hurricane City Planning Director Tony Foran says the sign was approved before it was installed, but the plans may not have done full justice to the bull's willy. Foran says, "We saw a depiction on a piece of paper, probably about 3 inches tall, that, you know, may not have had exactly the same proportions." Ironically, it seems one neighboring business does not have a problem with the size of the bull's big guy, and that's Chick-fil-A. When asked for a statement, their spokesperson, the cow, blushed and just asked if the bull was single.
Thank you so much there, Johnny Guns.
That is a bunch of bull, right, Aubrey?
That's what I was thinking.
I stole your line.
But you know, the guy who was the car salesman?
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's sticking around to try and make a second sale.
You might say that.
Persistence.
All right, speaking of endowed bulls, let's go to Lair's brother, Jerry. Who's on the line.
What a segue.
What an intro.
Jerry, how you doing? You in L.A. tonight?
Yeah, but I misrepresent that remark. Listen, I wanted to add something to your discussion about actors. Acting is not an art, it's a craft, and you have to keep your craft honed. Lair knows this. He's been in plenty of plays and things. You have to keep doing it. Acting is doing.
Yep.
And when it's a year between parts in a play, you've got to do something. And those equity waiver theaters are what most actors do. And if you take that away from them, where are they going to practice the craft? So that's something you guys haven't talked about, but it's in my opinion, it's pretty necessary.
Yeah, and you know, Jerry, in New York, there's off-Broadway and there's off-off-Broadway. And if you eliminate the factor of budgets, there's a lot of great acting that goes on in those tiny little theaters.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of good actors sitting at home right now. So you got to give them an outlet.
And how does that help the union actors anyway, Jerry, when you think about it? I mean, you know, trying to increase
their benefit. What was their logic? Do you know, Jerry, behind making this change?
Oh, no, I don't really know. You know, a lot of it probably is money, but a lot of it is ego. Actors Equity, along with Screen Actors Guild, they like to think they're the most important group in the world. You get individual actors together, and it's not so much about egos, but as a group, they're constantly trying to get more salary minimums, more perks, and that kind of thing. So
yeah, well, it was just
when I got into Screen Actors Guild, though, the average salary of members of Screen Actors Guild was something like $5,000 a year.
Ooh.
So for every Bob Hope out there making millions of dollars, you've got hundreds of actors that had one little part in something and haven't worked since.
Yeah, yeah.
So they need this outlet.
Yeah, exactly. But and that's part of the issue. But the other part of the issue, obviously, or at least to us, obviously, was Tim Robbins, the big liberal, seeing things from a conservative perspective, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't think he's shifting from being liberal.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But it's just like, you know, when the shoe's on the other foot, you don't care. But when the shoe's on your foot, you like the way it it's going to fit. And so the union forcing this on the actors, he doesn't like. But force it on McDonald's or somebody else, of course, he's fine with that. That's the hypocrisy. That's the irony here.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And hopefully he'll wake up and smell the coffee, so to speak.
Right.
Jerry, thanks for calling tonight. We appreciate you listening out there.
All right. I'll see you later.
All right. Thanks so much.
And a little something here for my brother. I got to tell you, folks, he's worked on major, major films and television series, so he knows the entire business.
Okay. April the 11th, there's going to be a 5K race up in Lake Helen, beautiful part of Central Florida here. It's the Power of Family 5K. And this is to benefit the Power Volleyball Academy in Lake Helen. And it's at 565 Lakeview Drive. And the race registration starts at a.m. that morning. The race will start at 9 o'clock. It's going to be a lot of other activities going on. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll be out there with a table as a sponsor for the event. And Power of Family 5K is going to be a lot of fun. Aubrey's daughter and the kids over at Stetson University and the entrepreneur class are setting this run up and organizing it. And I guess learning a few things in the process, huh, Aubrey?
It's all good for them to learn about how to do business, how to get sales, but it's all for a good cause because the money that is raised is going to help kids that cannot afford to go to places like this volleyball academy to hone their skills and improve it so that they have a chance of getting scholarships and so on. The money goes to that, so it's all for a great cause.
That's the Power of Family 5K, Saturday, April 11th in Lake Helen. 565 Lakeview Drive. That's 565 Lakeview Drive. You can go to runforacause.org. That's runacause.org to find out more about it and register for the race. Hope to see you out there. I'll be there. Aubrey will be there. That's for sure. And we'll be right back.
Run, Aubrey, run!
We'll be right back with Lair. Don't go away.
Not a cat.
All right, we're back. That's right, folks. Got one more segment of the show. That's right, you got the American Adversaries. And, of course, don't forget to tune in tomorrow. We'll be live with Abe Katzman, and we'll try to find out if there's a framework for a deal or not with the Iranians. But that situation just deteriorates by the moment. But once again, I think God is at work in our world. He is alive and well and hard at work. And what better way than to use Satan himself to set up the possibility of a better world.
He does that a lot. And Satan's kind of stupid because he always falls for it.
I was going to say, when you're with God, you're on the smart side of the equation. Right, Aubrey?
Hey, you're always on the right.
All right, let's get right now to Lair and his closing comments.
Well, it's kind of interesting. My brother called. I hope he hears this one. He may remember it too. Folks, my story is about a legend I'd heard as a young boy growing up in Florida. It concerns a small town just a few miles north of Orlando. It is the tiny, sleepy community of Casadega. Tiny is the operative word for this quiet, unobscure group of people who delve and believe in spiritualism, the supernatural, and a covey of Wiccans, including witches and warlocks. It is also the perfect place to hide, especially in the early 1960s. What better place could you disappear than an obscure township excluded by average people due to their kooky beliefs? Such was the case of Dr. Delbert Peterman. He was an honored scientific hero during World War II for his brilliance in aiding and extending communications for the Allies. Most of his discoveries are the keystone of worldwide and earth-to-space transmissions. However, the background and history of this man are nearly impossible to dig up on internet searches. From what I've been able to research, it is because of what happened in Casadega. Dr. Peterman was one of the first scientists courted by NASA after the war. He was the kind of researcher who thought outside of the box, way outside the box. A combination of brilliance and arrogance made him unpopular with colleagues, a trait that would never improve. Excuse me. His theories of sending messages into deep space and hoping for a response from an alien civilization became his undoing. His obsession created an impossible situation to work with others, and he was ungraciously fired. Delbert then decided to move somewhere where he and his wife Kim could live, and he could work unfettered by the confines of NASA. He put everything they had into buying a little home in obscure Casadega, Florida, but unknown to his neighbors, installed a powerful radio transmitter in the garage of their new home. His theory of sending messages mixed and tumbled into different frequencies did have a result. It ruined everyone's television reception in town. It also alerted NASA, who noticed a powerful mix of radio waves and a return of the same mix. Shortly after Peterman sent his message and received an answer, his radio transmitter exploded, killing Delbert and turning his home to ashes. The firemen arrived and found his mortally injured wife, Kimberly, who managed to say, "We contacted them, and they said, they're coming," just before she died. Who knows if this is true? I do. Wednesday is April 1st. Happy Fool's Day, my friends. I made it all up.
He did it again.
I did it again.
We should have known.
Did it again.
We should have known every Sunday around April's first day. All right.
Good, though, wasn't it? Did it?
Oh, yeah.
Aubrey, you were...
I was transfixed.
He was crying over here, folks.
Have you ever walked through Casadega? The hair on the back of your neck starts to come up. There's something... creepy. Some kind of vibe in that town.
It's a great little town. I've been there.
Okay. It is Palm Sunday. And, of course, we want to remember the reason for this season is, of course, the trial, crucifixion, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, where he died on the cross for all of our sins, if only we will reach out to him. And it doesn't matter what our sins are. Does not matter what our sins are. All we have to do is accept Jesus Christ, and our sins will be cleansed thanks to God's great plan. And I believe God has a plan that he's working on right now, and I do believe that he's using the forces of evil in this world to set up for the forces of good to rise again even higher and stronger than ever before. The likes of Barack Obama are not smarter than God. The likes of Satan are not smarter than God. God has a plan for each and every one of us, and if we voluntarily participate in that, it makes it a whole lot easier for him and a whole lot happier for us. If we are reluctant warriors, we will still be warriors nonetheless. But being that it is the Easter season and Palm Sunday, I just want to close out tonight's show by reading from the scripture. I'll be reading from Mark. Chapters 15 and 16, I'm going to start with chapter 15 at verse 33, the death of Jesus. "At the sixth hour, darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' When some of those standing near heard this, they said, 'Listen, he's calling Elijah.' One man ran, filled with a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a stick, and offered it to Jesus to drink. 'Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down,' he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurions who stood there in front of Jesus heard his cry and saw how he died, he said, 'Surely this man was the Son of God.' Some women were watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger, and of Joses and Salome. In Galilee, these women had followed him and cared for his needs. Many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were also there. It was preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath. So as evening approached, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent member of the council who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. Pilate was surprised to hear that he was already dead. Summoning the centurion, he asked him if Jesus had already died. When he learned from the centurion that it was so, he gave the body to Joseph. So Joseph bought some linen cloth, took down the body, wrapped it in the linen, and placed it in a tomb cut out of rock. Then he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where he was laid. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Solomon, brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified? He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter's. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. When Jesus rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him and who were mourning and weeping. When they heard that Jesus was alive and that she had seen him, they did not believe it. After Jesus appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking in the country, these returned and reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Later, Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating. He rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to hear those who had seen him after he had risen. He said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the good news to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name they will drive out demons, they will speak in new tongues, and they will pick up snakes with their hands, and when they drink deadly poison, it will not hurt them at all. They will place their hands on sick people, and they will get well." After the Lord Jesus had spoken to them, he was taken up into heaven and sat at the right hand of God. Then the disciples went out and preached everywhere, and the Lord worked with them and confirmed his word by the signs that accompanied it. We must be the light to the world, folks. We must deliver the message of Jesus to everyone, everywhere, no matter who they are, no matter what they believe, no matter what they're doing with their lives. That is our responsibility as Christians. I want you to have a happy Palm Sunday and a happy Easter next weekend. We won't be with you next weekend. We'll be back the following Sunday night. But do please remember the reason for the season. Easter, to me, is the most important of all the holidays. Christmas was the greatest gift, but Easter, in a sense, is the most important because that is when our sins were cleansed by the death of Jesus. It's important that we spread that word to the rest of the world, especially in this day and time. And I believe God is working on a great, glorious plan and that we are a part of it. Happy Easter. Night, everybody.
Amazing grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Was grace that taught my heart.
660. The Answer. WORL. Altamont Springs. Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent conservative. AM 660. The Answer.